the council and the industry to come and give us on the progress on the forestry charter. Those are the issues that will be confined to this meeting today. Before we proceed with the meeting, let me acknowledge apologies from the Minister Zokwane. He's on leave this week. Honorable Mapanga, on sick leave. Honorable General Peggy Kele, doing the political work in Eastern Cape. Honorable Mandela attending classes. These are the apologies that we have received, honorable members. Where is honorable staying? You still can?
Madam Chair, she will just be a little bit late.
Okay.
10 minutes or so.
Do we have any apologies, Mr. Chair?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. The apology is from the acting DG. He's also sent a written apology to the Chair. He's starting at the NCOP, but he will join the meeting of the PC later.
Okay, we are now going to invite the department to lead the presentation responding to issues that we have raised on with them as we convene this meeting. Not forgetting, honorable members, that this is the process of us engaging with the National Amendment Forestry Act. So we should not forget that as we discuss all the issues that will be presented to us. We decided to couple all the issues so that we can see how we can then tighten up the act such that it will then respond to all the issues that we interacted with when we have our public hearings. So I'm now going to hand it over to the department. You are given 30 minutes for your presentation, ma'am. All in your hands.
Good morning to the Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and thank you for the opportunity to do this presentation. My name is Kume Zanotada. I will be doing the presentation on behalf of the department. In terms of the presentation today, we will be looking at the purpose of our presentation. Basically, what we are bringing are the summary of issues and responses that were raised at the public hearing. Also, we were requested to also look at what we have done in terms of realization of Vision 2050 for forests, as we know that we had the World Forestry Congress in 2015. And lastly, to deal with issues related to the Gabelo Land Restitution and Development Trust. As I have indicated, the purpose of the presentation, I will go past that slide. In terms of the presentation today, this is based on the public hearings that the portfolio committee did in the nine provinces, as the Honorable Chair has indicated. And then we realized that some of the issues that were raised were not necessarily about the amendment bill, but were basically about issues related to forests and how communities benefit from our forests. The first two slides, which will deal with three issues. In fact, the first three slides, which will deal with three issues that are related to the lease agreements that we have signed with four companies who are represented today, and also those issues deal with land reform related issues. Just to give a bit of context to these three issues, when a privatization of state forest was initiated in the late 90s, it led to the signing of sustainable forest management lease agreements with four companies. That would be Osia Kubega, Amatole Forest, MTO, and Singese. Now, these lease agreements were signed, two were signed in 2001 and the other two were signed in 2005. And at the time of the signing, although we knew that there were claims that were submitted by different communities, none of those claims had been settled. And that is why the government representation in the whole process included the department which dealt with forestry at the time, which was Water and Forestry. It included Public Works. It included the National Treasury, public enterprises, and rural development, to make sure that the interests of all the different stakeholders is taken into consideration. Now, one of the things that the lease agreement deals with is how we recognize these communities within that lease agreement. So Clause 18 and 19 deals with those issues in terms of when the land claimants have been identified, then there would be a discussion and an agreement between the department and this land claimant to make sure that the lease itself continues to be implemented, but at the same time to recognize the work, the needs of the community. So where we are right now is at a place where rural development, in terms of the claims that have been settled, which are 13 in the four packages out of the 38 claims that have been submitted, they are finalizing the settlement agreements. And then these settlement agreements are done in conjunction with these communities. In addition to this, in terms of our responsibility as a department in monitoring the implementation of the lease agreements, we do have quarterly meetings with the companies. We do also meet with rural development to also look at the implementation or the finalization of the claims. We also do site visits on projects that the companies would say these are the things that they are doing for communities. They also have liaison forums according to Clause 46 of the lease agreement, where they are required to liaise and communicate with communities in terms of the needs of those particular communities in the areas where they function, and we participate in those in those areas. And then the other thing is that the companies then pay a rental land use rental for the use of the land where they are operating, and that rental is then stored within the Kabelo Land and Restitution Trust, which I will speak about towards the end of this presentation. So in terms of issues of non-compliance, we deal with non-compliance in terms of these quarterly discussions that we have, and we also would have an annual discussion at the end of each year where all the companies will come together, and then we will deal with the challenges they are experiencing or the challenges that as a department we are experiencing in terms of the implementation of the Act. And of the lease agreement. And then linked to this is the issue of the delays that communities have experienced in terms of issuing of their title deeds. We as a department, we engage with rural development to make sure that these title deeds are issued, and there is a certain process that they have outlined to make sure that this is done. For instance, for the Singesi package, we have had discussions where our deputy minister also participated in leading that process to make sure that the claims that have been settled in those in that package, we can be able to finalize the settlement agreement. And once that settlement agreement is finalized, then the title deeds can then be issued. Now, in terms of the finalization of the settlement agreement, there are issues that have been raised by communities. For instance, they wouldn't want DAF to be a middleman. The challenge with that is if DAF is not involved or government is not involved in the management of the lease agreements, we will not have confidence in terms of whether the relationship between the two will be fair. For instance, we do things like rent reviews to check whether the rental that the companies are paying is still market related. And that is the work that the department does on behalf of the communities to make sure that there is that fair distribution of the rental. The other issue that was raised was the issue of the long turnaround time for issuing of water use licenses. As we know that in terms of plantation forestry, you would need a water use license because it is classified as a stream flow reduction activity in the National Water Act. So that is a responsibility that is for the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation. But we do engage with the Department of Water and Sanitation to make sure that there is an increase in terms of dealing with these issues. So we lead a task team called the NAERS, National Authorization Task Team, where we deal with the issues of water licensing. And also through that a task team, we assist the applicants with the process of application, but also we have set aside some funding in terms of conducting environmental impact assessments that communities would have to conduct if they wanted to enter into forestry plantation management business. So far, we have received licenses for the Eastern Cape for about 10,000 hectares, and we are finalizing for KZN for about 4,500 hectares. And for the new financial year, we are going again to the Eastern Cape to do EIAs for about 10,000 hectares. And that we are working with the Industrial Development Corporation, and we also work with the companies in terms of dealing with those matters. Sometimes we find that the delays in the issuing of licenses is incomplete information, and that is why we get involved to try and assist the applicants so that the right information is provided when the application is submitted to the Department of Water and Sanitation. In terms of the dysfunctional committees that the department is working on, I think one of the issues with regards to the forum was raised in the NYSNA public hearing, where the Western Cape Forestry Sector Forum representatives were there, and they raised a number of issues that were related to specifically in the Southern Cape around NYSNA, Tsitsikamma, George area, and the support that they would request from the department in terms of ensuring that they are able to function. DAF has established these forestry development forums in all forestry provinces. So we have one in Limpopo, we have one for Eastern Cape, we have one for KZN, and then we have one for the Western Cape. And due to the financial capacity, the limited financial capacity that we have, we then try and make sure that the four of these forums do function. Their role is to bring in stakeholders within that particular province. For instance, we've identified the Eastern Cape as a potential province for new afforestation. So the Eastern Cape forum would then focus on how do we make sure that trees are on the ground in the Eastern Cape. So you bring in the industry, you bring in government, the different government departments, and then also the funding institutions, so that there can be a plan in terms of how to move forward with those establishment of plantations, especially in the areas where there's communal land. We have, since the last with the meeting in Knysna, have met with the forum on two occasions, and we have developed an action plan that will make sure that the issues that were raised can then be addressed, because some of the issues are not issues that are related to DAF. Some are issues that would need collaboration with DPW, collaboration with environmental affairs, collaboration with MTO, collaboration with SANPARK. So that process is underway. Now, the other thing that we do, we used to have what we call participatory forest management committees, which were started just after the Act was enacted in 1998, and the funding for those was mainly from we were funded internationally for us to be able to establish those. And because we haven't been able to have enough funding to keep those going, and when we assigned SANPARK to some of the areas to manage, then they fell into the People's and Parks Forums. So SANPARK is assisting us with those forums. And with the discussion that we had with the forum, the Western Cape Forum, and the action plan that we have developed, we've agreed that we will then have SANPARK participate in our discussions so that those forums can be resuscitated. But in addition to that, we've leveraged collaboration with SADC, where there is a Japanese project that is being run to try and resuscitate participatory forest management committees in Africa as a whole. So this SADC project, we've had a couple of our officials that have gone for training and have submitted funding proposals. And we are then looking at then getting that funding for us to resuscitate these fundings and also assist with the People's and Parks Forum so that they can be established. And that is part of the implementation of the SADC Protocol on Forestry that South Africa has ratified. In terms of assisting communities residing close to forests with employment opportunities, the department manages about 64,000 hectares of plantation forests out of the 1.2 million hectares that is currently under plantation forests in South Africa. So what we do is when we issue out tenders, for instance, for harvesting, we would then encourage and insist that locally laborers must be used for that work. But we also liaise with the companies to try and encourage them to make sure that they source labor locally within their areas where they participate. We also work with other departments, for instance, the Department of Environmental Affairs through the Working on Fire program, when they do training for firefighters and establishing fire teams within the areas where forestry is. Now, in terms of tenders, since forestry is a national competency, we have to comply with the National Treasury Regulations, and therefore we would advertise on national papers and not necessarily on a specific provincial paper, because we are required to do so. And because all communities within South Africa need to benefit from the work that our plantations are doing in the country. In terms of raising awareness in terms of the Act, we do have plans where we raise awareness. We would have our National Forest Health Foundation courses where we would train communities, we would train judiciary in terms of understanding how we implement the Act. We would raise awareness through our week, but we recognize that there is a need to ensure that there is more of this happening, and therefore we will then ensure that in the new financial year and the other years to come, we will try and intensify our awareness programs just to make sure that we are able to provide the awareness that is required, which of course will require that we have additional funding for us to be able to reach all the communities that we would like to reach. In terms of access for consumptive and non-consumptive uses, the Principal Act allows for the provision of access, where we allow communities to access wood, for instance, for fuel. They would access mushrooms, and some would do a bit of honey making. So that is taken care of within the Principal Act. And also what is required is that all the companies that have leased land from us are obliged to make sure that that access is allowed. And then in terms of management of forests by communities, the Principal Act, Section 29, allows for this to happen, where we encourage communities to request a permission from the minister, where they are able to manage this forest through community forestry agreements. At present, we have a signed agreement with three communities in KwaZulu-Natal for 26,000 hectares, and then there's also 1,400 hectares in Limpopo. There are other requests that we are also considering. For instance, we are doing now a business plan for the Ludidi community, which also requested that they manage a plantation in the Mount Frere area. In terms of transformation in the sector, the department participates in the council, and we obviously have our own commitments as government in terms of the charter. In terms of government commitments, it would be our department, water and sanitation, rural development, and public enterprise through SAFCON. So we have done a lot in terms of achieving those commitments. Some I've spoken about in the previous slides, where we're talking about the community forestry agreements. That is where we deal with the transfer of plantations to communities. And then we collaborate with the FPNM CETA in terms of skills development. One of the issues that was raised during that is in the commitments of the charter, just to mention a few, would be where the sector had identified that there's a shortage in terms of sawlogs, and a strategy was developed and is being implemented. And the other one would be the issue of forestation, which I spoke about in the previous slide in terms of what we are doing as a department. But also, in addition to what the council does, we then meet with the industry through our commercializing forum, where there is representation from all the subsectors of forestry, where Sawmilling South Africa would participate, the Forestry South Africa, PAMSA is Pulp and Paper Manufacturers of South Africa. There's also recycling association that is participating, contractors, SAFCAS, the Contractors Association. So they all come and have a discussion with us in terms of how do we make sure that there is compliance within the sector of the charter, and also there is growth within the sector itself. And then in terms of poor working conditions, although we are not responsible, for instance, in terms of wages in the sector, we facilitated in assistance with Forestry South Africa in terms of sector determination for remuneration of forestry wages and salaries, where now we are on par in terms of what the Department of Labor requires the sector to do. In addition to this, in areas where there is workers that are not treated fairly, we would then intervene. For instance, there were issues of housing issues that we identified in Kidratif where communities had come to report, and we worked very well with Mondi to try and deal with those issues. Now, in terms of the World Forestry Congress, the Congress was held in 2015, as I mentioned before, and there was a declaration which we call a Durban Declaration, which was the outcome of that Congress. Now, following the Congress, we have made a number of interventions. One is contribution to the Sustainable Development Goals, which would be our SDG number 15, which deals with management of forests. We've also collaborated with the Environmental Affairs in terms of international policy negotiations in the UNCCD COP 30 and UNCCC COP 23 discussions, which were held two, three months ago. And then in terms of encouraging the participation of youth and women, the Amendment Act also deals with this in terms of making sure that there is participation of youth and women in the National Forest Advisory Council, which is a council that advises the minister on all forestry issues. And through the NFAC program, it is currently investigating how it can encourage the participation of youth and women can be encouraged. And that work is done in collaboration with the Department of Economic Development. And then in terms of youth, this year we started to support the students in their forestry symposium, which is held annually, and we'll continue to do so. In terms of food security, we have developed an agroforestry strategy, and we are currently piloting the strategy in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. KZN and the Eastern Cape will follow in the new financial year. We also partner with municipalities in implementing the national greening strategy, which was of course reviewed to accommodate issues of food security, where we are now providing 70% fruit trees and 30% indigenous trees. That contributes to the food security, but also contributes to mitigating the climate change impact. In addition to this, it would be the land cap program, which I think the members are aware of in terms of how we deal with integrated land use issues and how we deal with rehabilitation of degraded land. In terms of sustainable forest management, we have also revised the principles, criteria, indicators and standards that look at how do you make sure that there is sustainable management of your plantation. In addition to this work that has been done, in 2015 we also identified legacy projects with the industry, where there are a couple of projects that are taking place in different areas. One of them is in the presentation, which is One Tree, One Child. There was a project that SAPB was leading in Mangozi. There's a project that SAFCOL is leading in terms of furniture making in Mpumalanga. There's a project also with Ethekwini Municipality in terms of encouraging youth to participate in forestry activities. The last part, Honorable Chair, that of the presentation will be dealing with the Kabelo Land and Restitution Trust. This is a trust that is established according to the Act. It is established by the Minister, and its responsibility basically is to receive the funds that are paid by the company, invest those funds, and then pay it to the relevant or the rightful land claim beneficiary. The trust currently has 7 trustees. Initially, the trustees were DAF officials, but now it has been expanded to include rural development, a public enterprise, and Forestry South Africa to make sure and to increase the accountability in terms of the things or the decisions that are being taken. And the trust complies with provisions and requirements. This includes the PFMA, the Act itself. Now, at present, the trust has about 656 million, and the funds are invested in the PIC. the first disbursement of the funds to communities. If you remember, we've said that not all the claims had been settled. So in 2011, the president did a first disbursement, and following that disbursement, we then realized that after the communities received the funding, there were a lot of conflicts that arose. So to try and deal with that, then there were two options in terms of a disbursement model that was developed by the trust. The first one would be if a community is receiving the funds for the first time, then it would be allowed to use it for personal use to go with the trend that happened in 2011. And then from there on, funds would be used for community projects. If you look at this slide, in the amount that was paid in 2011 to the 8 communities was 91 million. Following that, there were a number of conflicts that arose within the communities. And then between 2015 and 2016, we have paid 13 million to 5 communities. Out of these 5 communities that we have paid, one of them, the one in number 2, has not submitted any proposals for community projects. The amount that was paid was to deal with the shortfalls that they had when they dispersed the money in 2011, because some of the people who were supposed to be paid were not paid, and then we had to cover that shortfall. So each payment that is done now is based on the CPA itself must bring a community resolution to say there is agreement that a certain project will be done by this particular community, and then the trust is able to fill those funds. This slide is just giving information that I've already spoken about. Now, in terms of the projects that the Kenyan communities have undertaken, for instance, the Kolombane community in Mtata has upgraded the existing water scheme, where now all households have tap water delivered straight to their homes. The Nzimankulu community in KwaZulu-Natal, in Nzimankulu, has a couple of projects that they are doing, ranging from vegetable projects to brick making, and also using some of the money for administrative costs for the project. And then the last one would be St. Paul, also in Mzimkulu, where in terms of education-related projects, they have installed a computer lab for their school, where there are 35 computers that have been bought. They are taking 10 students to varsity. Some are already at third year. So as soon as the third years are done, then they will add more students at first year. They have also done community projects like upgrading the community hall, the clinic, and also building some offices. They have also done some upgrading of their water scheme, and also a fencing off for their agricultural projects. I think, Chairperson, that would be all in terms of our intervention. Thank you.
Before you stop, can you indicate on the slide that you mentioned in the community, which municipality are those communities on? And it will be very helpful for members of the community to interact with the presentation.
The Umtata would be Owar Tambo. The Mangolo is Nomzimkolo is Sisonke. I think it's the Sisonke municipality in KZN. Those are the two communities. I'm sorry, the two municipalities that have these communities are at right now. Next to Richards Bay.
Keep the trust.
King Shajwai.
King Shajwai.
Shajwai. So that would be the Mkhwanazi. And then Ngunjini, St. Paul. So number 2, number 3, and number 7 are all in the in KwaZulu Natal around. And then Xelane, Ngolombo, and Gotoha, and Kolombani are all in the area of Tambo district.
Thank you very much, DDG members. This is the presentation from the department. Any question or interaction with the presentation? Honorable Crooker, Honorable Maloyi, Honorable Tata, Honorable Crooker, and Honorable Tongwan.
Thank you, Ma'am Chair, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Madam Chair, I only got about 3 questions roundabout. What stood out during our conversations with the communities in the different provinces was that DAF definitely didn't get the community involved around forest for job creation. So I just want to know, and the presentation was a bit vague, what is the plans to develop those communities into small businesses so that there's job creation? The second question is about Mpumalanga province. The community in Mpumalanga province that attended the hearing, they reckon that they claim that they were not informed timely to that hearing. Some of the members or community members that was that attend that meeting claim that they only heard the previous day about this that hearing. So I just want to get feedback on that. Why was that? And then the last point, Madam Chair, DAF is not serious about developing small growers and small businesses around forest. These big businesses are bullying the communities around forests. And you know, I know for instance, it was claimed that in the Western Cape, that hearing that we attend, they use contractors as far as from Mpumalanga. So the small businesses around the forests are crying and say they're getting bullied by big business, the so-called private companies that using our state asset. So if you can just give us some feedback on that. And then, of course, the Cabello Trust, but I think that is a matter for another day. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Church. I must indicate that the presentation did not meet my expectation. Now, you see, we've been to more than 3 provinces. And in all those provinces, the department was represented. And as we conclude, when we're summarizing the discussions, the the message we are consistently sending to the department was that all these issues that are not related to the bill, but related to issues of forestry and so on and so forth, your department, you must go back and look into these issues. If you need to come back, you must come back on your own, attend to these issues. And on the 28th, we'll have a meeting where you will then tell us as to what is it that you have done or what is that you are going to do to attend to those specific problems raised by our people in those different areas. Now, you will agree with me that in terms of your responses, which we read now, those are generic responses as to what is that you have done, structures that have been existing in any way. All those things have been there. But when you go there are specific problems that people have raised. So Chair, I thought that they will respond to those specific problems and say to us what is that they are going to do or what is that they have done. And I don't have that particular presentation before me. Unless if there is another document which might be thick maybe, which is accompanying this summary that you have presented. If it is there, I will have to go through that document. But before me, I don't have that document. So I'm still insisting, Chair, that I would want the department to respond to specific issues that were raised. You know, we have those issues in front of us, but I wouldn't want to start the discussions that took place in those public hearings. And all those issues, we have mentioned them. In this area, there are these issues which were raised by the communities. In this area, there are these issues. And we are not responding to those issues. And that's what we would want you to do. You will also recall that we did acknowledge, as a portfolio committee, that other issues do not necessarily belong to DAF, but they belong to other departments, which then suggest that after those meetings, it was then your responsibility to interact with those departments and say there are these specific issues that were raised and so on. Can you talk to us on these issues? Because on the 28th, we are going to a portfolio committee to respond. And I'm not happy with the work which has been done. And that is why, Chair, I will not engage with this presentation up until I get what are the responses on issues that were raised by Mandlovu, Magungubele, and so on, who raised issues there which were very specific. And I thought that the other thing which will go to town about it, which I hope that somebody is going to talk to us about this one, living conditions. You know, this just a summary. You know, when we're in Mpumalanga and so on, I think almost all members of the committee were almost on tears after understanding how our people living in those those particular areas in 2017, after 1994. I thought that the department will be able to say, we have interacted with that white fellow who believes that he is better than any other person and so on, and that's how we are handling these things. And we are not getting that. And I must indicate, we are public representatives. We represent the public. They speak to you through our voices. Now, if you don't respond to this issue, then I have a problem, Chair. I have a serious problem. That's why I will not interact with this, because this presentation does not meet my expectations after having visited those different provinces. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Tongwane.
Thank you, Stephen. I think the whip has somehow covered me, because I wanted to say not much has been said about, especially the last public hearing of Mpumalanga, about the conditions under which people are living. And it was reported to us as a portfolio committee that people were denied an opportunity to attend the public hearing, because if they leave their work and go for public hearings, they were not going to be paid for that day. Those are some of the things that you wanted to hear as to how perhaps the department intervened. Thank you.
Honorable Clapper.
Thank you, Chair. My main worry about the presentation was that to me it was indicating normal working routine, and actually in informing us about things they want to do and things they ought to do. It didn't seem to address the real issues. First, I was worried in page, I think it's 8, where it was said that the portfolio committee further invited, no, it's not 8, it's 5, bullet 2, further invited communities to raise the issues. It's as if we just went there to ask the communities that must bring other issues. Whereas the reality is that in the process, it was discovered that many, many issues come from the communities, and therefore we had to open a platform for them to raise those issues. Not necessarily that we went to raise those issues. But the main thing is that the approach here is really not assisting us. It seems to me that it is still, in fact, I was having a feeling that it's still to be done, or it is something that the department has shifted to the private sector, to those private companies, because, and not unless, then it can be proved like that to me. But it worries that the issues that are being raised here are not really responding to the issues that we felt that they were very, very hot. You are very polite. You say assistance is given to communities. There's participatory marriage management forum. Those are nice things. What we, it's nice to hear them. You talk about, in fact, there's another one who was worrying me when you say you are making something which is not a condition. They are encouraged. It is not a condition that for them to work with these communities, A, B, C, D should happen. They are not requirements. And therefore, it tells me that there's still a lot to be corrected here. There's a lot of things that are supposed to be made clear that for to attend to these issues that the communities raised, A, B, C is supposed to happen. At the moment, it's still a gap. Definitely, we still have to give some information that concretely responds to these issues, because as I was saying, we did not invite those complaints because we went there for that. We went there for the bill, but it proved that people are not interested in the bill if the process does not address their daily needs. And unfortunately, to us, that's a serious commitment. It's our responsibility to see to that even before they know about the bill, they are making a living. They are living normal lives. It does seem that there is some kid gloves treatment here within the department and these companies, which actually to us indicated that there's a lot to be changed. Thank you, Chair.
DDGs, you can respond.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members for their questions. I must apologise that we have not been specific on issues. I think in one of the slides we did mention that we have had some engagement, and we have not been able to meet with all the affected parties in terms of trying to resolve the issues. When we met with the, for instance, when we met with the Western Cape Forestry Forum, where issues that were identified and we tried to resolve them. There were issues around the payment of rentals, for instance, and we recognized that the Department of Rural Development would need to first settle that claim for us as a department to do that payment. So with the action plan that I referred to, I think it was circulated to the members. If it was not, then we would have to recirculate it, because it outlines certain things that we have said that we will do, that we have committed to do, in collaboration with the other stakeholders that are involved.
So why didn't you present them here? Why do you circulate them to the members and not present them here now?
Honorable Chair and members, Chair, we really never want to come to the PC with information which would be disappointing to honorable members. And from the Chair and from honorable members, it looks like the presentation is really not meeting expectations. And we do take that, Honorable Chair, and I'm making a humble apology for that, and I'm making a humble request that probably we should go back and really beef it up, you know, in a way that will be addressing specific issues that were raised by communities, if that is agreeable by the Chair.
But you see, DDG, we've pronounced this meeting on our face day at Umtata that we'll have this meeting, and we want the department to come and respond to these issues. Now you are apologizing. You know you are wasting our time, honestly. You are wasting members' time. You know, we've taken leave from the house sitting today because we had to have this meeting the whole day. Now you must come and apologize. You knew that this we're expecting you to raise these issues.
Honorable Kruger?
Yes, Madam Chair, it's very disappointing. And what the department don't realize, this is not just issues. This is warm bodies. People that's suffering at the moment. Warm bodies. And I mean, you know, there's forums and there's a lot of things. And if the department can't come back with a plan how to solve those issues in 2 or 3 weeks' time, then I don't know how we're going to solve those problems at all. So it's very disappointing, and our communities out there are suffering every day that this department is delaying response on these issues. It's a day more in a suffering day more in the life of our communities. So I think it's disrespectful to the committee, not just the committee, but disrespectful towards our committees out there, communities out there. Thank you, Chair.
Did you bring the managers of those plantations that we visited, all of them? Are they here? Yes. Can they come? PGR, move. Let them come and respond to the issues. You can sit. Yes, the rest. The managers of the plantation. The list. Yes.
Good morning.
process. You can introduce yourself so that honorable members can know you. Starting from your.
I'm Jan Weiss, the executive manager of Merensky. And basically, then it's SFP that's got the lease with DAFTA.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Morning, honorable members. I'm Lawrence Polkinghorne, and I'm the Group CEO of NPO Forestry.
Morning, Madam Chair. Morning, honorable members. My name is Christopher Rance. I'm the CEO of Amatole Forestry Company.
Did you receive the information that communities have raised during the public hearing from the department?
Yes, we did, Madam Chair.
So what are you saying about them?
Well, there's a process being followed. We've submitted a detailed response to every single concern raised in the Back to Office report, which was submitted to both the department and to the Charter Council, which is in detail. We then also have responded to the invitation to present here our initiatives and work towards transformation, specifically socioeconomic development, enterprise development, and the like. So we've done both. So if you give us an opportunity, we'd be delighted to present what we are doing as industry, but more specifically in my context as MTO. But I think there is a bit of a disconnect in context of understanding the holistic transformation landscape and what is actually going on directly.
Okay.
Would you like my colleagues to respond before I...
Yeah, they must respond before I give you a chance to... Yes, sir?
Lady Chair, we've got quarterly liaison committee meetings, which is actually an ongoing process. To my knowledge, there wasn't a specific issue in the SFP region. The issues that come up, we handle as we go along. There are many issues, and I believe we handle them as they come. But we're making significant progress. We're making a difference. We're making a difference in the areas that we operate, from developing communities in terms of job creation. The company itself is creating more jobs, planting more trees. We're offering contacts to communities in the areas that we operate, and we're assisting with the land claims process in the Eastern Cape. It's all been resolved. We were intensively involved. All 8 claims have been resolved. We're also assisting in terms of the land claims in KZN. And we're supporting enterprise development and also supplier development. And again, I can go into more detail. I've got a presentation, so if you want me to spend more time on detail, we can do that later.
Chair, yes, with regards to the amendment bill to the National Forest Act, apparently there were going to be hearings in the Amatola region. To our knowledge, they were cancelled. So we attended a meeting, I think, in Kokstad. But I don't think any of the communities in the Amatola region raised any issues to our knowledge at the other hearings. So with regards to issues that the communities in the Amatola region have about the National Forest Act, we're not in the knowledge of those issues. So we were invited to talk about the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act at this hearing, and we prepared a presentation which we'd be happy to submit later.
Any question on the issues that they've raised?
But I want us to start with the Charter Council presentation, then we'll allow them to present later, which will link to the Charter Council's presentation. Okay, thank you very much. Can we give it the chair to come? So you stay there. Say,
good. Can I do it from here? Or should I go in front?
Is your presentation going to be connected here?
I think we submitted that to the Department of...
No, it must be connected here. So that's why it's supposed to stay here.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members. I represent the Forest Sector Charter Council, and I'm the chairperson of this council. And I think it will be opportune of me to indicate to members here that now the Forest Sector Charter Council, you know, has a mandate that it should fulfill, and that is that of facilitation and interface between government, industry, and community in terms of policy making. I'm going to skip some slides because I want to come and focus on challenges, which is what was raised here most of the time. Now, the origin of the Council and the Act, you know, that mandate us to do what we do, I think it's reflected on the charter. That's the BEE Amendment Act, number 53 of 2003, which was launched in 2005, finalized draft charter in 2008, for a B draft charter gazetted for public comments in May 2008, published again in 2009, and then it was revised in 2017. But this report still speaks to the old codes, where we had seven elements, you know, relevant to industry in terms of their transformation process. The main objective I've already mentioned, to extend economic opportunities and benefits of forest sector to the previously disadvantaged black communities. Now this was, you know, set up in such a way that now forestry resides in rural communities. And forestry is supposed to uplift the lives, like it was said here earlier on, the lives of forestry related people. In the past, in terms of skill development, the focus was only on people who were working for the forest themselves. But now the new codes now have changed. They say now you don't only train people that are working for you, you also train people of communities within which the forest is related. And apart from that, after training them, you don't train and leave them to go looking for work. You train them and absorb them at the same time. And this is what companies should be doing as we're talking right now. Now, we have different categories of companies. I'm not going to be speaking to this. You have growers, you have contractors. You're speaking about contractors, people hiring contracts from far, bringing them in. You have growers, you have contractors, you have coal people, etc., etc. And within the council, we have the following representation. It's industry, government, community, FPM, CETA, as well as labor. But unfortunately, you know, since the upheaval of COSATU, we've been trying to get a labor representative within the council, and they are not coming in. But we're forging ahead, believing that when they resolve their issues, they'll definitely send a member in to come and join us. Now, the reporting process, I think that one is very clear. The mandate here of the sector is to develop sector-specific ED and SED guidelines to provide technical interpretation on sector goals, review and realign sector goals, issue scarce core and critical skills to the sector, and develop yearly plan of activities for implementation. Now, to this effect, in terms of providing a technical interpretation on the sector goals, last year our community outreach program went basically to all the communities in the countries where we were soliciting the advice as to what is it that they require and what is it that they believe government should do and what is it that they believe the industry should do. This report was submitted to government at FAMIN when the deputy minister held a meeting, and it was indicated to both industry and government as to exactly what the communities require. The report is there. For this year, the outreach program now is going back not to the communities anymore, to industry as well as government, to ask them what they did in terms of the report which was submitted from them, emanating from my visits from communities. Now, we've started that process, it's not complete. Perhaps when we are finished, we'll send a report to the chairperson of the portfolio committee so that you should be able to see whether what the communities tell us what they want and what they say they want from you is aligned and speaking to each other. Now, in terms of transformation, I'm going to skip before. Let me go to the first question. Now, in terms of transformation, the status itself. Companies have to submit certificates from SANAS or accrediting bodies, and together with supporting evidence. And from this, we are able to compile a report, which we then submit as the status report. The graph you see on the screen there is just to indicate to you that now these are comparison of certificates which were received by the sector, by the council, for us to be able to compile, you know, the kind of status report that we've already submitted. Now, the certificates received per entity are also indicated on the graph, where you have your medium and large enterprises submitting 23, your qualifying small enterprises submitting 16 certificates, and your exempted micro enterprises submitting 21. Now, you should take cognizance of the fact that now, both the qualifying small enterprise as well as the exempted micro enterprise are not subjected to a rigorous process when they submit their certificate. An affidavit is necessary for them to qualify for that process. But with the big companies, it's a quite different issue altogether. Now, the next graph that you see there, it's a status of transformation from the medium and large companies, the ones that you see here. Now, if you look at the graphs carefully, we've made a comparison of 3 years, of their 3 years in terms of the status, where they belong. Now, they are very high performing in terms of ownership, if you look at it carefully, preferential procurement, and as well as enterprise development. But they are doing not should I say, not that badly with socio-economic development, which is what we are talking about right now, as well skills, employment equity, and management and control, they are not doing very well. And I think one reason why, in terms of employment equity and management and control, they are not doing very well is because they are not doing proper training. If you were doing proper training, you'll be able now to to uplift, you know, the position of the employees and promote them to managerial positions or whatever it is. But if they are not well trained, they are not suitable for those high positions. If they were training them very well in terms of skills, they would be able to go up. But the other issue, which is the mitigating factor of why they are not being able to train, is the fact that now there is no land available for industries we are talking right now to grow. We've been talking the issue of 100,000 hectares for the last 10 years. It is still 100,000 as we're speaking right now. Because if this land was unlocked and they were hiring more people, there would be more training. You can't keep on training the same people again and again and again. I'm not trying to exempt industry from what it should do, but I'm just indicating that now we have a factor which is a limiting factor, and this emanates from our own government in terms of what industry can do. And they'll use that as an excuse if we give them an excuse of doing that. Now, the BEE transformation of your medium and large enterprises comes out there. Now, if you look at the comparison there carefully, ladies and gentlemen, it's a comparison for the 5 years in succession. 5 years in succession. So that you must see whether there's progression or there's no progression whatsoever. Now, the graph is self-explanatory. Just look at the graph, you can see whether there is improvement or there's no improvement whatsoever. Now, broad-based economic empowerment also focuses on blacks as well as black women. Now you're looking at businesses which are owned by blacks, it's about 19.9%, but women-owned, then you have that small percentage, 6.62%, which means transformation in terms of women getting into the forestry industry and doing what they're supposed to do and growing in their positions is very low. Looking at it carefully. Now, the last one there, if I'm not wrong, is the qualifying small enterprises in terms of their average. Remember, these are the ones where they are just submitting certificates. They submit a certificate and they're in. As long as, you know, the amount of money that they generate is not beyond a certain threshold. In the past quotes, it was about 5 million, and I think right now it's about 10 million. You must have less than 10 million in order to qualify. In the past, it was 5 million in order to qualify. Target attainment. Now, these are the certificates received. I'm going to skip all those and come to the challenges, because I think this is where the problem comes, even with industry not doing what they expect us to do. These are the challenges, and I think the challenges are going to touch both government as well as industry. I'm not going to leave anyone aside, because if I do that as the chairperson of the council, I'll be very unfair. Now, here, the summary might not be there. I have it in a different slide altogether. The sector maintains a level 4 BEE status.
Yeah, why is not reflecting this?
Okay, I think it is. There was. The sector maintains a level 4 BEE status. What it means is now they can only claim 100% of procurement spend. We still have three other levels above, which is level 3, level 2, level 1. We prefer that they go to level 1 if possible. We prefer that they should go to level 1. We've been bouncing up and down or yo-yoing like a yo-yo on level 4 for the last 3-4 years. We've been bouncing up and down at level 4, as if people are doing what they've been doing all the time, repeating what they've been doing all the time, and not changing anything at all. And I think what we need is a paradigm shift in terms of their operation. People should definitely change and say, we did this way last year, we were at level 4. What is it that we should do now in order to progress to level 3? But the level has been level 4 all the time, and we are still bouncing up and down at level 4. Now, summary in terms of the qualifying small enterprises level 3 of BEE status. The emerging macro enterprises is level 4, challenges. Here we have inconsistencies in terms of submissions. Companies submit this year, next year they don't submit. There's an inaccurate, what I would call an accurate database. There's verification using generic scorecards. Now, the new codes are saying as long as you belong to a sector, you can't use the generic codes anymore. And I think things are going to change. Things are going to change. Because as long as you belong to the forest sector, you can't use the generic codes anymore. They used to choose as to which one they wanted to report in. Now they can't do that anymore. Now, what is it that we thought perhaps could be done in order to improve the situation? At the strategic planning session, we agreed that there should be an impact assessment of what these forestry communities are doing in the, you know, forestry companies are doing in the forestry industry. We should do that impact study. Now, the database itself should be, you know, updated. And I think to this effect, we've agreed with SLANA that whatever companies submit its documents for accreditation at SLANA, that information must be available to us because it was very difficult for us to get companies to submit the right documentation. Now, we've started with what we call CEO visits. As it is right now, I've already visited MTO. My starting visit was with the DDG in the Department of Agriculture, where I indicated to her the merits and demerits of what is happening in terms of the sector itself. Now, I visited NCP in Natal. They had problems in terms of the accreditation also. We did that. Now, there are other visits set up before the end of the year. Now, the community outreach program here is also being intensified in one way or another. I've already indicated that we made a first visit where we went to basically all the communities. And they indicated to us, and there's a document which was circulated to both government as well as industry to indicate to them exactly what communities want from them. Now, up to this point in time, none of them responded. Now, what we did was, now we're going to make a second visit, but we're not going to communities because we cannot go back to communities and indicate to them that you gave us problems last year. And we still have the same problems. We are making visits now to government departments as well as industry to react to that document. Give an example. Last year it was realized when we compiled the community outreach program, we realized that now the Department of Water Affairs will take close to 365 days before they issue out the license. By that time, the accreditation of that company has already elapsed, expired. Now the company must apply again. And hence this inconsistent kind of data submission to us. He said, now perhaps that should be changed totally, it should be. The issue of land also comes in. The issue of transportation comes in. The issue of creation of co-ops also come inside that report. And all these were submitted to the department, and we only hope that they are going to respond to them. As an intensified community outreach program, I don't have a problem with them. And then intensified knowledge sharing exercise, etc., acting ED is already doing that. She's moving around with SANAS and doing that. And then revised reporting on undertakings. Okay. What we agreed with the department in our strategic planning session was that instead of us determining what they should do in terms of transformation, they should extrapolate within the strategic planning document what they would be doing for transformation. Now, they've given that to us. We've developed a template where they should report. And unfortunately, it is only DAF which is reporting in terms of that template. The Department of Water Affairs is a no-show. Department of Rural Government is a no-show at all. The reporting template remains empty in terms of those departments. And what we're saying here is that now we've been appealing with the department to ensure that we meet with the Department of Water Affairs as well as Rural Development to ensure that our reporting becomes complete. We'll see if that comes to fruition, but if it doesn't, we'll have to report it, you know, to our principals and ensure that indeed they do assist us in one way or another. Can I say thank you?
No.
I think I should say thank you, Chair. If there are challenges, I think I'll respond to those.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Let's allow the companies to present, particularly focusing on those issues that were raised in the communities, because you said you were given them. No, I'm referring to the managing directors. You are fine, Chair. So let's give them a chance to present. We'll come back to you. Give the copy after you've presented. So I'm referring to the managing directors.
Thank you, Lady Chair. Again, like Lady Chair, thank you. I've got about 60 slides, but I'm going to run through them fairly quickly. But you're welcome to interrupt. I'm going to talk Simbizi Forest Products. We've got the lease with that, about 54,000 hectares. Just majority shareholder of SFP is Hans Marenski Holdings. Just a slide on the values of Marenski, and I would just like to. We believe our roots, five values, health and safety, integrity, inclusivity, innovation and quality. And therefore we want to be better suppliers, better neighbor, better business partner, better corporate citizen. We want to be financially better and also a better employer. The detail I've already mentioned those five values that we've got. As introductory part of the Marenski Group, we believe we make a difference in the areas that we operate, specifically taking the lead in rural economic transformation, creating jobs, I've got the numbers on that, planting more trees, recapitalize our sawmills, some more detail on that, continue to pay our rent to that, specifically with the land-lands process, and then also providing socio-economic development to communities, and then lastly, but very important, enterprise development and supply development. I've also got a few examples on that. Really complex slide, Lady Chair, but I would like to just summarize all the stakeholders that are involved in the SFP. So this is we've got the shareholders at the top, HH, ECBC, Circle, STT, STT being a community trust. STT's also got a, call it a industry investment arm, Zanga Industry, which the trust owns 100%. You see the communities on the right are represented in the STT through two different trusts. I'll also talk some detail on that. And then obviously with DAF at the bottom,
the rental agreement with DAF, DR, the Department of Rural Development Land Reform, we've been involved in terms of the transfer of land, and Department of Public Works, in which the many of the properties actually based. And in the company itself, there's been based on the forest vehicles, plant equipment to grow, hopefully shareholders values, shareholder value, and in return, the objective is obviously to make profits and dividends. Singizi then, in terms of add value in plantations, about harvesting, transporting of logs, replanting of trees, trimming operation called pruning to make sure that the quality of the trees are 100%, and also which we call thinning operations to ensure optimal growth of the trees. At the sawmills itself, it's the sawing of logs to sawn boards, drying of boards, kiln and drying, and then the finished products be sent to the customer. Background, I think Mrs. Nodara mentioned it. SST was formed in 2001 when Safcoal and DAF privatized the forestry assets and the plantations and also the equipment, the mills itself. The shelding then was HMH 50%, EDC 14, Safcoal 25, and the majority shelter, HMH, in consultation with DAF, negotiation with DAF then, decided to offer 10% shelving to the SDT Community Trust. It was free of charge. I've actually mentioned the majority of this already. Important to note is that the sawn boards, the product that we offer to the market, is largely for housing. We call it structural lumber, mainly used in roof trusses. It requires trees to grow 20 to 30 years in aggregate so that we can use it as in the right quality. Also, we need, for 1 hectare, you will spend about 24,000 hectares over that period. The planting itself is about half of that. The balance is in terms of pruning and thinning operations. Just interest, Lady Chair, is that since SFP started in 2001, all the trees that we've planted, we haven't yet harvested one of those. Others, we're still harvesting trees that were planted by Safcoal and those years. And obviously, it must have been tough times for Safcoal then because the trees are not of the required standard that we are currently doing. So we're still harvesting, so to speak, inferior trees. It's reflected in the quality, the challenge that we've got in the quality of our product. But because of the lifespan, or the cycle, you need 25 years before you can harvest. After 17 years or 16 years now since we've taken over the plantation, we haven't harvested yet one tree of what we planted, and the investment in replanting so far is 345 million over the past 16 years. That has been mentioned, what are the barriers to entry for new plantations, the EIA, it was, I think Mrs. Nkudara also spoke on that, water licenses, planting permits, and then obviously complete with agriculture and population growth. We believe, and I think this is quite an achievement in an industry that's been very tough, we know of all the challenges in terms of wage demands, we've had lots of fires, when SSP took over the plantations and the mills in 2001, there were about 1,700 permanent jobs. Part of the agreement was that the Singizi sawmill was quite a challenge, and there was actually an agreement that if we get a replacement for the mill, that those 386 jobs were at stake. Currently we haven't lost them, they're still all employed. Recapitalized the malls in 2015 and 16, and potentially it could have resulted in about 1,000 job losses if the end we didn't retrench one individual. We actually kept those jobs, and currently we're 2,326 jobs. So we created over 16 years 620 jobs, and that's all within the communities that we operate. Also, remuneration, which is a challenge, obviously from a competitive point of view. But in terms of wages, we've done a benchmark in the plants to about 8% higher than industry average. The areas that were, when we took over the plantations, TUP, it stands for temporary unplanted areas. Those are areas that were not planted when we took over in 2001. About 13.4% of the 54,000 hectares, in other words, about 7,200 hectares were not planted. We've since reduced that to 4.8%. So the unplanted area now is about 2,500 hectares. So we planted additional 5,000 hectares to bring the unplanted areas down to the percentage of 4.8%. That was an investment of about 41 million. In terms of firefighting, those also past 16 years we've spent 351 million. An investment in roads, yes, it's roads not only for the transportation of locks but also for within communities that could be used by communities, 227 million past 16 years. Since 2001 we've invested 417 million in terms of a recapitalization program. It's largely spent on 2015 and 2016 on the new new mill at Weza. Recapitalization was done and what is the right issue? And HMH, at the end, only HMH, the majority shareholder, could follow the right. Safco, SEBC and SDT did not follow the right, therefore a dilution of shares did take place to the extent that HMH has now got a 77% shareholding, Safcorp 10.5%, ECDC 7.4% and SDT 5%. But I'll come to that also, what the 5% now actually is worth. It's actually worth now more than the 10% then. I thought just to share with you, Lady Chair, and also with the honourable members, is just you probably are aware of Tweefontein Sawmill that is in Saab. It's not part of SSP, but it was part of Marinsky Group. It was unfortunately closed down in 2009 because of too high lock prices that was being charged by Safcoal, and the mill was making losses of 2.5 million per month. And why I'm showing this is just how sensitive a mill is in terms of lock costs. And there some thousand jobs were lost, which was absolutely a disaster in terms of history of Marinsky, and I think also for the area of Saab. Obviously not part of SFP, but I thought I would like to mention that. Land claims, we fully support the process we involved in bringing in 20 workshops with DRTL, Department of Rural Development Land Reform, also with that. As I said, There were eight land claims in the Eastern Cape that have all been settled, and we will continue to support on the land claims in terms of in the other area in KZN mainly. Just one step back, SSP about a third of the plantation of the Eastern Cape, and the two thirds are in KZN. We paid lease payments to that about 10 million per annum, about 128 million past since 2001. Some detail on the SDT. SDT was a 10% shareholder, and now the 5% shareholder. I said it was founded by the shareholders and also with DAF's involvement then. It's governed by a trust deed. It's formulated by the founders under the jurisdiction of the Basel Court. The rights of dispossessed landowners are entrenched in the trust deed, and trustees are nominated and elected by communities at the AGMs of the two respective trusts. It's the beneficiaries are all inclusive status of families in the areas of the communities. Benefits are channeled to the community as controlled projects and investments. Dividends to be used for specific purposes, and 5% could be spent on admin. This is the structure of the trust then. We've got the Langeni Community Trust, which is representing the Eastern Cape community. There are 14 trustees, plus then four optional members, the traditional leaders, civil leaders, and two third parties. And on the SCT, Langeni Community Trust, that's on the KZN side, same number of trustees, and the communities are 163 villages as beneficiaries. As I said, in 2001, the 10% represented a value of 14 million. In 2001, that is net asset value of the balance sheet. Because of the recapitalization that was done by the main shareholder, that 5% is now worth 39 million in terms of of value. So even if it went down from 10% to 5%, the value has increased because of the recapitalization I just mentioned. Then there are proposals that the ECBC shares and the SACL shares also to be transferred to the SDT. Dividends paid, unfortunately not the past 10 years, but 2002 to 2006 we paid dividends of 2.3 million. And obviously the objective is to achieve that again. Conditions have been very tough. Those were the booming years 2006, 2007 in terms of housing. Currently much more competitive. The prices have come, didn't keep those levels. Many challenges in terms of fires that we've got. You can see the money that we've spent in terms of planting, plantations, spending money on firefighting, spending money on building roads. We currently support the trust, the SFP trust, the SFP trust, with about 300,000 per annum to assist them with the administration of the trust, and also some bursary contribution of about 200,000 per annum. Also, as I've said, SDT has got an investment arm. It's owned 100% by the trust, Zambi. Zambi's already got a shareholding in a locked transport supply contract that the company has got. And it's also got a shareholding in the security service provider of the company. What we do is, whatever we've got a venture, we will always invite Zambi to participate as a potential. SDT communication channel, they are a director and observer on the SFP board. We share the information. It's also then shared at the LCT and SDT levels. I think also to the beneficiaries, also on the liaison committee meetings. In terms of LDE status, in the old codes, SFP 2010 was a level 6, advanced to a level 4 by 2015 and 2016. And then with the introduction of the new codes beginning of this year, if you were to apply the 2016 norms to that, we were unfortunately non-compliant. But this year we achieved the level 8, and we will again put in all effort to advance again as we did advance with the old codes. Our community development department, that's the company that's inside the SFP. We've got 8 full-time employees that are full-time involved in community engagement, community projects. We spoke about the liaison committee meetings, 28 liaison committee meetings per annum with community leaders and all role players. I mentioned that. All the projects are highly accelerated with Lady Chair. We support on education, experimental learning, community training, health, enterprise development, security creation, events and celebrations that we somehow sponsor, community leader support, and support of government initiatives. I'm going to run through this a few things that we've done at schools. Typically, repairing of infrastructure buildings, offering learning materials, playground equipment. Those are the cases that are in our area that we assist. There are also 2 or 3 cases that are in, that are, of which the buildings are owned by DAP or then by SFP, and we maintain it, we charge no rent to the cases. Also for the schools that we support, we've got a number of projects with the schools in the area, specifically 2 high schools and 2 junior schools. Also on our properties, we charge no rent, and the main buildings are maintained by SFP. Number of programs, school environmental education program, we've got a refuse bins project, water projects that we offered where we supplied water tanks to those communities. We had a project where we refurbished 140 school desks to a specific school. Food security awareness program where we donate not only seeds but also vegetables to certain schools. Fire prevention association where we offer training and capacity building in firefighting. There was a workshop also, biological demonstration by the shark sports, which we also accommodated. Sawmill tours, it's learning, experimental learning for the schools, plantation tours, 500 learners, 300 learners on plantation. Student symposium, we had 130 international forestry students that we that we engaged with also the past year. Community training, so it's a wide spectrum, HIV awareness, fire prevention, basic firefighting skills, etc., care and protection of indigenous forests, valuing the trees, also the grazing policy to look after that in the areas between the forest areas. And again, majority of this involved with that. So we've been involved in 120 groups with about 4,000 community members that we were engaged with the last 18 months. Maybe mention artisan program that we've trained internship, 29 internships that we've in 2017 that we've trained. 30 apprentices were provided for the opportunity of training, and after that we employed 4 of those. On the clinic side, as I've said, we look after the clinics that honor the properties, and we also offer housing to some of the nurses if the hours are ours, also free of charge. And then we offer basic, we would help with the maintaining of the buildings, and even with the transportation of medicine, of urgent medicine. We've had SMME workshops, about 90 delegates attended. Then a very exciting project. We started a C-square tree nursery farming cooperative, where we this year bought 100,000 eucalyptus seedlings from them, and then we planted trees. We assisted them with the growing of the seedlings. We supplied workers with tables to make them operate within the law. It was an exciting project. It started as a charity project, but it's now become, we offer offcuts of timber to this project, where they make furniture and also they then sell, and we're assisting with developmental support and hopefully to grow this business. We've got a medicinal plant nursery that we supported in the group, and the objective is to relieve the exploitation and illegal harvesting of plants from the indigenous forest. Another good project that we have here in the year. We've got a beekeeping project of which we supplied the beehives, about 2,000 beehives. In terms of the digital TV transfer technicians project, we've trained 11 entrepreneurs. This is government in rolling out the digital technician. I can carry on entrepreneurial skills training, ecotourism project in the area that we've established, it's hiking in the mountain bike trail. We offer trees for planting the communities want. A number of trees planting of orchards, the virtual project is offered 40,000 cabbage seedlings, and we're also now looking at the project where we can introduce avocados, which is actually also a leg of the main tree group. We're looking at areas where maybe the conditions are good for planting avocados, it's also very exciting. And then on the recreation side, I'm not going to spend much time on that. It's about soccer teams that we're supporting, netball that we support. Youth Day, Heritage Day, Arbor Day, we can move the trees to the trees that we plant on the 8th day, and we have also facilitated the best people to speak with the pupils. Youth Day also ranks the guest speaker. Then support for community leaders. We've got a very good relationship with community leaders. We assist them in the areas between the plantations. We also get help from them to assist us with fighting fires. From time to time we spend the sponsored things and donated to the ventures. And there was also a water project that we supplied to the community to have decent water. A number of other initiatives that each and I can send the presentation so that if you want to have the detail with you. Soccer kits, trophies, We had a crime prevention campaign where we involved the SAP, South Africa Police Services. We had a workshop to against illegal hunting and poaching. Sometimes we sponsor diesel fuel for specific initiatives. I think also a very successful venture from government is the Working on Fire. Very good relationship with that initiative from government. In conclusion, we believe that the market downturn that we've experienced after 2009, and with the series of labour strikes that we've had, for example, 2 years ago we had a strike of 3 months at the Langeni Mall Forestry in the Eastern Cape. Arson attacks in terms of fires. This year still, we had, like I mentioned, we were going to lay a claim against the Sepawu Union because they instigated fires in the plantations in about 1,200 hectares were affected, and we're going to write about 300 hectares. So take that into account, the tough business circumstances that are currently out there. But in terms of the capitalization that we've done, it's showing signs of improving, and we're excited that we will build on this so that we can again get to pay dividends to our shareholders and to the community link, through the SDT link, and we will continue to support transformation and job creation in the areas of operating. Thank you, Lady Chair.
Thank you very much. The honourable members, we take all the presentation or can take into our questions and then we proceed. Honourable Maloy.
Good. Chair, I think we must take all the presentation. But before we do that, I want to pose a question to you, Chair. Were presenters informed what is expected of them today? And if yes, maybe you can share with us. Have you, as the Chair, changed the format of today's presentation?
No, Honourable Maloy, they were aware of the presentation, what they expected of, and they have not changed anything. So I'll request that presenters focus on issues that you said you need answers on. You know, the good story that you are projecting is already overshadowed by what we have discovered on the ground. So convince us that you are doing something with those issues that community are raising in the areas where you have plantations. Because I'll give example with the Eastern Cape, and because you have the plantation in Eastern Cape. The communities around Eastern Cape, for instance, they are raising, you are saying you are training people, they are raising issues of the lack of training, yourself and department have taken away their grazing land. So we want to get response from those issues. And the other thing is that department spoke about paying people from Cabello Trust. They are raising the issue of not being paid. You see those areas. So it will help. It will be very helpful. Maybe just to those that are coming in to present. Even share with us the population around your plantation, and as you are saying, you have created jobs. If you are saying you've created 10 jobs out of 2 million people, it's like you've not done anything. So it will be very helpful as you present, you even show the baseline out of this population, this is how much you have created jobs, so that you can then say how you're doing something. But the presentation does not help us to relate the story that we found on the ground. We are trying to relate this story that we are telling. That's why we said, because you can travel to Cape Town, we'll give you the opportunity to come and present your side of the story before it goes to Parliament. Because this discussion will be taken to Parliament, and we are not convinced, we are not getting response from yourselves, your side of the story, which is what honourable members are raising as their frustration. They are even said I've changed the agenda of the meeting. So can you help me to chair the meeting, please, by responding? You said that the department has given you issues that were raised by the community around your plantation. What is your response on those issues? If you acknowledge them, you should then say, this is what we've not done, but this is what our commitment is. So that as a committee, we'll then follow up your commitment. But it doesn't help. Please help me to relate the story that you are telling us to those that you found in the provinces. Can we get, you want to respond before we go to, because you have not actually given, your story does not respond to the issues. You have chased away the department thinking that you will bring a better response, but I'm not convinced that you are bringing a response. You want to respond, sir, before we pass to another presentation?
Yes, there was no intention of us to change the agenda. There was a third bullet that said we can also talk on any other point that we thought was relevant. So we thought, just to put it all in context, we just thought that maybe also give more background, but apologies for that. That wasn't appreciated. Just on specifics. The specifics we talked to Dev, and currently Mr. Nodara can maybe add, there's not a specific one currently. There's a number of smaller issues. If you talk of land grazing, we're aware of it. We're not taking any land grazing. It's in terms of after we've harvested, whether we can replant. There is currently a case like that with Nciswa. We're aware of that. We're handling it. And lots of this is just about to communicate, to sit. And we encourage at the liaison committee meetings that those issues are discussed. So we've got a number, we've also got an issue where we want to issue is to start initiation school, and maybe it also came out, initiation school in our plantation is also a process. We just want to make sure that we follow the legal process, the replanting in the CISO case. And then there is a fence issue of a specific area. So apart from those, Lady Chair, there's nothing specific that is currently outstanding in terms of the community, except that we are not aware of it.
Okay. Sir?
Thank you, Lady Chair.
Madam Chair, honourable members, just for the sake of the meeting, in context of what was prepared today, we were requested to prepare company activities and progress towards the implementation of a BEE Forestry Transformation Charter, specific corporate social investment projects, so things like activities, interventions, locations, beneficiaries, as well as any other information you may deem necessary and useful for members of Parliament to note. Notwithstanding, there is a detailed report on the back to office from the DAF response to the portfolio committee meetings that has been separately submitted addressing every single one of those issues. So can I make a suggestion that that report please be circulated to the portfolio committee for those specific agenda items? So what we prepared is a holistic transformation approach, and we're going to show you what NTO is doing and the journey that we've been on. Okay, so I think it's important that we take a holistic view on transformation. Our purpose statement at MTO is to reshape and transform the African timber landscape responsibly. I think responsible transformation means it needs to be independent, interdependent, codependent, holistic. It cannot be looked at and achieved in isolation. But for us, it's an exciting journey, and for sure, it's not a journey that can be, you can't wave a magic wand and resolve issues overnight. But the transformation that we've managed to achieve from 2015 till today is essentially very exciting for us, and we continue to strive to become level one contributor in terms of the sector transformation code. But we see it as a very inclusive and strategic imperative in our business, and we're committed to this, and it's not going to go away. We completely changed direction as far as our strategy is concerned. So we sketched out a transformation landscape, and one of the honourable members actually said there's nothing different. Nobody's changing. What are you doing to change? I think in the way in which we used to manage with command and control, we used to separate, everything was simple and there was certainty. I think in today's world, and particularly in context of leadership and inclusion and participation of youth and people that are coming in, they're not interested in looking at old school, old world management techniques and styles. We need to be much more aware of the complexity. We need to influence and delegate and empower. Integration is important to us, diversity, intuition, effectiveness, and adaptability. These are all core competencies that we've built into our proposition in terms of our management and looking at our value system, looking at our culture, in really turning and changing what industry used to be in by way of retrospective, reactive, old world. We're trying to introduce, and we are successfully introducing, a whole new way of work in context of the forestry industry. So transformation isn't limited to one specific sphere. We see transformation just about in every aspect of our business. And as a result, it kind of speaks to a broad-based transformation strategy. We transform economically through procurement, joint ventures, agroforestry opportunities. Looking at cultural transformation, we subscribe to a different way of work, to an MTO way of work, where our values are specifically designed and our culture is specifically moving towards an inclusive and participative operating model. But we paid a lot of attention to the new sector codes, and we looked at that holistically, and we didn't want to get tied down or locked into one specific area. So we've been working since 2015 on the new sector charter. So where enterprise development, socio-economic development, employment, equity, skills development have been really important to us, notwithstanding obviously management control and ownership. But it's important also to understand transformation exists beyond just that. There's systems, business intelligence, digitization, access to information and transparency brings this whole transformation closer to home with people having access to information and information available to them. So this presentation is dealing with the three sort of major thrusts around the journey towards activities and progress towards implementation of the BEE Forestry Sector Transformation Charter. And I will focus specifically on SED and ED initiatives. But if you look at the three sort of core areas, socio-economic development, where we have community health and safety initiatives, job creation, community upliftment, education, job opportunities, enterprise and supply development. I'll talk you through our opportunity, business opportunity that we've created within our company that addresses the enterprise and supply development arena. And obviously skills development. I mean, the in-house and external training courses that are offered through this program and through all of these programs essentially has worked extremely positively towards achieving a healthy employment equity balance. So in terms of our executive, I mean, we are currently employing 2 black female executives to join us on the EXCO One being a chief engagement officer who's going to look after stakeholder relations, specifically the broader context of that with government all the way down to our communities. But understanding the broader opportunities around alternative land use, around community participation schemes that are actually attainable and achievable, measurable, tangible. In our senior management, we have 19 of 33 that are black. And we're working every day towards improving it and gaining a better EE status. I noticed the average was 5.76, ours is 8.9. So we are trying to achieve, and we continue to try to achieve, these goals and targets. So in a little bit more detail, if you think about skills development, if you look at that, what we do is run a number of selective courses. And these are aimed at junior management, supervisory staff, mid-management, senior management, and executives. But in essence, we have a holistic approach to making sure that we incorporate as much skills training as possible across the spectrum of management. We have an MTO training center, one in Concordia, one in Mpumalanga. This year we've trained through there 13,000 people. We have 112 CETA accredited courses. That's happening. We have apprenticeships. Unemployment Skills Development Program, which is a fascinating program, it's been extremely successful. So far, we've put 180 people through that development program. The categorization is 0 to 30, you have to be under 30, you have to be unemployed, and obviously previously disadvantaged. Of those 180 people, the absorption rate has been pretty good. Mosgas, Petra SA, Fancourt, Lancewood, all neighboring businesses and others in the industry, and some of our industry colleagues are starting to take up these skilled people who were previously unemployed. It's been an extremely successful program for us. Internal skills programs, we pay a lot of attention to sort of management, leadership, supervisory skills, mentorship programs, and also things like emotional intelligence development, because of the cultural importance to make sure we all understand that this transformation word is not a scary, negative, affirmative, action-oriented perspective. This is a holistic, inclusive, participative journey that we're all on together. So, going further, my slide, I've added a few more things. That's just an interesting snapshot to show you the difference in the management control. It used to be 10 people in 2017, 2018 it'll be 6, 3 of which are women, 1 of which is black. The D-band, those are your senior executives, those are the white people in 2015. In 2018 that's the number of white managers left. Those are the black males growing, and those are the black females growing in the senior management executive roles. That's actuals. That's the C-band. But the exciting thing here is to show the pool of people that are growing into the business, that have been through these training initiatives, that have been accelerated through the programs, that are able to come up and perform in management roles. It's a very exciting space to be in. So, socioeconomic development. This is a broad-based and very important part of what we do. We spend, on average, in 2017, we spent $6 million. Last year, we spent $4.8 million in this area. So community health, looking at different initiatives, the wellness programs, for example, we've run 5 separate programs of 1,000 each. The impact of that is deep. We feed 1,400 people a day. Now, you take that indirect impact, take a meal out of a household, how many other people are benefiting from that? The study showed 3 to 5. But if you go around that wheel, I'm not going to go into everyone in detail, but there's a focus on ensuring that there's job creation through alternate structures and alternate strategies and alternate opportunities, not specifically just employment. Community upliftment programs, we focus quite heavily on education, where we have partnered with specific people like EduNova, where the target is to have 24,000 school leavers taking back into their schools digital platforms and online learning access and online learning capabilities. But we've got companies doing school transport where it's difficult for people to get to and from school. The Wilderness Foundation hosts many, many children through environmental teaching and forestry learning. But it just shows the broadness around the social economic development and the community infrastructures. We've looked at housing, we've looked at clinic upgrades, we do those. We've got 8 multi-purpose centres. And in terms of housing, I mean, it's very difficult to put a number on it, but we continue to look after villages that are not our responsibility, and yet we continue to look after them based on our social responsibility. And we're not going to stop until such time we're able to reach agreement with DAF, municipalities, DPW and other stakeholders. So enterprise and supply development. So we've got to sort of understand what are we doing for black people in this industry? How are we developing entrepreneurs and what's the plan? So NTO has a company called NTO Enterprise Development. It's owned 51% by a women trust, wholly owned Black Women in Forestry and Black Youth in Forestry Trust, in partnership with NTO. And in essence, that's given us a framework to be able to go to market to raise matched funding, which we've successfully done through the DTI and through the DEG. So the spend in that area just on developing contractors is circa 14 million. That's not on the actual contractor contract. So 14 million a year will be spent between now and the next 3 years developing contractors. We have 36 on the program currently. Those are all black-owned contractors. And the target is to spend, the current spend, and I'll show you the final slide, is about 100 million of 250. The target is to spend over 50% on wholly owned black-owned companies. But this initiative is really exciting. So we've got funding available to them. So with SEPA and with our own initiatives, so asset financing, already we financed 8 million rands worth of assets in the black entrepreneur base to allow them to grow. We facilitate working capital, equity funding. We've given a bit of startup capital. Preferential payment terms are important, so we've been able to be soft on the loans to give them opportunities to find their feet and start operating. We talk them through institutional capacity building, so we've got design programs and courses that deal with financial, entrepreneurial and HR skills building. These are sort of management development program level skills courses that are offered by third parties and funded partially by the DTI and DEG, but matched by ourselves. And just the upliftment and the excitement that is existing within that base, I think, will far outweighs some of the negative influences or the negative feedback that is coming through in some of those portfolio meetings. And I urge the portfolio committee to go beyond one or two negative voices and really get down deep into the roots of all of the contractors that work across the platforms of all of the NTO businesses. So we've looked at really how do we develop, how do we support, and funding is important, giving long-term contracts is critical, and making sure that we're there to ensure that there's no opportunity for failure, which is not simple. So when I try to summarize all of this just in context, we harvest about 70,000 hectares or so of land, generate roughly 1.3 billion rands. Wages and salaries are about 200 million. Of that, 140 million rand goes straight to communities, of which about 1,500 jobs are supported. Skills development is about 8.5 million rand, of which 12,000 mandates were trained. We procure about 800 million rand. I call it generic. I think there was a different word for it. It's medium and large. The QSEs, we spend 150 million rand. EMEs, we spend 170 million rand. We spend 100 million rand on black-owned businesses. 30% black women-owned businesses, 20 million rand. So within the contractor base, we're spending 90 million on black-owned contractors, of which nearly 3,000 jobs are supported via those contractors. And we continue to aim to grow. So I think in a nutshell, to summarize, and I will address the one comment that was made about external contractors for argument's sake. It was done in 2012 when a rigorous program was put out to try and understand, to address sustainable harvesting and sustainable forestry. Mechanization was required. So, unfortunately, at that time, there wasn't a black-owned business that had the capacity, capability, and ability to raise the amount of funding required to do a mechanized harvesting operation. So it was, but they did come in from Mpumalanga. The only other one that we have employed is being employed for 6 months due to the 10,200 hectare fire that we recently experienced in June, July. There is no capacity in the country that can harvest 120,000 cubic meters a month in order to try and get wood off the system and out the system within a 6-month window of deterioration. So So it is, and it does happen, but it's certainly not part of what the mandate is. And I can attest to, and there is a 97% local employment rate and local contractor use. The other thing, just to also say, we are a level 4 contributor on the new sector codes, not on the old sector codes. So we maintained our status, and we continue to strive to grow and to achieve a higher status. We're not far off number level 3. We believe very much that there should be, and it is never a satisfied point where we can actually say that transformation has been concluded. This is an evolving, and it requires a lot of continued improvement, collaboration, but I think better communication. I think as industry, we don't do a good job of selling ourselves, and I think that we lack the impetus, or we lack the throughput in terms of really getting to send the messages out to where it needs to be reached. But we also need to look at alternative strategies, and I think as industry, we also need to understand that to be sustainable and to be able to offer tangible returns and tangible opportunities for communities to participate, we need to look outside of the box and beyond perhaps a one-dimensional forestry opportunity or forestry plan. So, Madam Chair, I'm not sure that was disappointing. I hope it wasn't, but it does address what was asked of us, and I do welcome you looking at the detailed report that was submitted, which will then answer the line-by-line queries. Honourable members as well. Sorry if that was disappointing.
You are supposed to be the third one.
Yes.
Yes,
thank you. This is the first time that our company has presented in front of this committee. Just to clarify why we're here. As I said, the hearings were apparent before the amendment to the National Forest Act were apparently cancelled in the Amatolia region. So we are not aware of any specific community issues relating to the Act or to the forest lease. And to the best of our knowledge, the community issues in the Amatolia region have not been raised in hearings. We deal with 83 communities through our Clause 46 processes, so that is the number of communities that we deal with. I've taken the liberty, the invite asked us to present company activities and progress towards implementation of the BBBEE Forestry Sector Transformation Charter and specific corporate social investment projects and any other information. So unfortunately, there are no community issues that I can respond to. So I might be disappointing in that respect as well, and I apologize. I've taken the liberty of providing some background information. Because certain elements of the Codes of Good Practice require additional expenditure, in some cases material amounts, so it is a necessary condition for the implementation of Codes of Good Practice that they are affordable for the enterprise, and in certain cases this can represent a challenge for a forestry enterprise. For those who do not know who we are, Amatola Forestry Company was the entity created by government to house the state's forest assets in the Eastern Cape South Package, that's Stutterheim and the Hogsback regions. It was sold to a private consortium, Amatola Timber Holdings, in 2005 in terms of the SAFCOL-DAF commercial forest restructuring. AFC owns the plantations and leases the plantation land of the East Cape South Package, which consists of 14,500 hectares. And this lease commenced on the 1st of April 2005. The shareholding in the group is 25% black from inception in 2005. Our current contribution level, AFC is a level 3 contributor under the old codes, and that is still currently the valid certification. We have a dedicated BBBEE strategy and program. We operate in an isolated region. This region is economically depressed. The Amatola Forest region is in the old Ciskei homeland. It still suffers from the apartheid homeland era. It is economically depressed. Unemployment, according to Stats SA, is at 55%. Most industries of all sorts have closed in industrial centres like Dumbaza, Kaaskamahoek and Seymour. Six major timber factories have closed in the region in the past 20 years and not reopened. There's been a significant loss of employment. We are an isolated timber economy. We have lower profitability levels due to entrenched factors, and we have high costs associated with these plantations. It must not be forgotten, Madam Chair, why government decided to restructure these plantations in the first place. I've included some photos of the economically depressed factory circumstances of the region. The timber industry is dependent upon road access. All district roads serving the Amatola timber industry are gravel roads in poor condition, except for one. The transport of products in the rainy season to market is a major limitation. The East Cape government road budget simply cannot provide adequate roads for everyone in the Eastern Cape. And our company has to do its own district road maintenance at its own cost, illegally I might add, with government's acknowledgement and acceptance. And that amounts to a significant amount of money. There's some examples and photographs of the problems that we have with the roads. Fire is a serious threat. We must remember that when our lease commenced in 2005, 40% of the plantations had been destroyed by fire. Sorry, I was focusing on my notes, Madam Chair. Forest fires are a serious threat to the economy that destroy economic growth and jobs. AFC in this last year spent 17% of its budget, or 13 million rand, on fire prevention. And we have to deal with an average of 60 to 80 firefights a season. Sometimes it can be as much as 120 or 140. This map indicates the area of the plantation that had been destroyed by fire since 1997. And I've also included the DAF plantations in the region which have been destroyed by fire. So when we talk about transformation and economic development, the reality for the timber industry is that we're going to get nowhere with that program unless we have an economically healthy industry. And it starts with protecting what it is that we've established. So AFC has, in the last 12 years, placed a very high emphasis on fire control. And to our knowledge, we've got the largest aerial firefighting capability between Ugie and Knysna. And we provide this firefighting service free of charge to the wider community at no charge. Firefighting is a deadly business. We've lost staff killed and assets. But we've had tremendous success in containing the fires. We must remember that a basic principle of the National Forest Act is sustainable forest management. And we will not achieve that unless we control the fires. AFC's mission is to grow high-quality pine saw logs on a crop rotation of 27 years. Saw logs are processed in Rand's Timber sawmills. The isolated location means the group has to perform most operations in-house. Silviculture, harvesting, transport, sawmilling, maintenance. This business model creates a strong value chain multiplier. The business model is labor-intensive. Rand's Timber Group employs 1,400 people, 96% of whom are black, and AFC, the company, employs 376 people. But the long crop rotation results in slow investment returns and a high risk from fires. The saw log business model requires a long time to recover. Those are the current AFC stats. We brought the temporary unplanted condition down from inception of the lease down to near its target of 2%. But it'll take another 20 years for the pine clearfell yield to normalize, to stabilize at sustained yield. So forestry requires patience. As an example of this, this graph is a graph that the SAFCO consultants gave us in 2005 and is of particular relevance to the question of the lease period. This graph on the red line shows that it will take 28 years for AFC to recoup the operational losses associated with the cost of re-establishing the plantations as they existed at the time of the inception of the lease. So discussions around the lease period, if that is an issue being raised by the communities, cannot be discussed and cannot be decided without considering the forest economics. So that's the background, Madam Chair, on the BBBEE activities. It is a program that we very much believe in. Just personally, I understand the pressure that is being brought to bear on the forest companies regarding transformation and economic development, because these companies can and should provide a real meaningful beneficial for the rural communities. Being a rural-based industry, it is perfectly placed to add economic benefit and social benefit to the communities, and they must do so. Our program has resulted in continual improvements over the last 6 years, to the point that under the old codes we are a level 3 contributor. Under ownership, we have been 25% owned since inception, and our strategy going forward is to include land claimants as shareholders. This program is supported by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, but no land claims have yet been settled in the Amatola region. So that is a challenge, and our ownership development program is being delayed by the slow pace of the land claim settlements. On management control, of the 376 employees, 97% are black. Of the promotions in the last year, all have been black. Of the appointments in the last year, all have been black. We have 11 foresters. There are 4 white foresters, there are 7 black foresters. There's no white forester that's been appointed in the last 10 years. On management control, unfortunately don't have a graph or a schematic showing the change in the demographics, but the current status is as presented on the slide on page 24. There are challenges against the employment of women in roles such as heavy forestry, manual labour and firefighting. Skills development is, for forestry companies, is a challenge. We believe that with respect, the new codes are weighted against labour-intensive industries. I'll talk more about that later. We also have challenges in obtaining funding from the CETAs. With enterprise and supplier development, we're involved in a few projects. I must point out that since inception, as indicated by that graph, AFC has not been profitable and won't be. So the scoring on the enterprise development and socio-economic development, now the new codes supplier development, is dependent upon the profitability of the enterprise. Despite that, we continue to spend money on these issues. We're involved with developing plantations, which is a very meaningful and exciting project for the Taita community, and with an emerging black farmer and with black contractors. There's some photographs. Again, we have challenges in development of supplier development in our region because we are isolated, because it is economically depressed. Our socio-economic development program is driven largely through our interaction with communities through the Clause 46 liaison structures. those structures are working very well. We maintain very good relationships with the communities and with the traditional leadership. There are issues, but they're dealt with. Challenges. As previously said, we are concerned that the new codes are weighted against labor-intensive businesses because of the high rand cost of scoring skills points. And for a forestry company, there is a practical limit as to just how much training one can actually do. Training is always necessary. We do training whether we need to do so for the triple BEE program or not. But our calculations show that in order to earn the points on the new codes, it could reduce your net profit percentage by between 2% and 3%. And the flaw is that it is based on the amount. It's based on your wages cost, not on your net profit. So the more people you employ directly in your business, the higher the skills need and the more money you need to spend on skills to earn the points. Our future Black Economic Empowerment Strategy will focus on ownership development with the land claimants, on management and supervisor and leadership development and technical skills, and with supplier development. As said, the specific CSR projects are very numerous and are rolled out through the Clause 46 process. Priorities given to categories of education, basic services, sports, community development, emergency relief. I'm not going to go into all the details, the pages of beneficiaries and recipients, but just a couple of the prime examples are outdoor centres, schools, Fort Cox Agricultural College, etc. We provide a range of benefits to the communities relating to water supplies, basic services, sports, community development, infrastructure, maintenance, and also emergency relief. Other information and challenges. I think most people are aware of these issues, but I record them here for the record. We would like to see closer communication between the licensing authorities and the timber industry around the issue of planting permits. We feel that in our particular case, we have not been sufficiently consulted with, and the real economic benefits of the various water use enterprises have not been adequately debated. The roads infrastructure will remain a problem in our region for a very long time. Firefighting cost is a heavy burden. It is absolutely essential, but it is very difficult for us to bear this cost alone. There are opportunities for emerging black timber farmers, and I'd like to see more government support for them. And I feel also it is necessary to point out that in the Eastern Cape, the challenges that I've explained are also having to be dealt with by our colleagues in DAF. And if the Category B plantations When they become more productive, they will be an important economic factor for examples like emerging black sawmillers. And I'd like to see more focus on this going forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Amatole. It was not so disappointing. Can we then, members, take questions, clarification for this representation, and then we'll then come back. We'll come back, deal with SAFCO. We still have SAFCO and other presenters. So, because we were approached to the lunch, so want us to finish with the three, then we'll come back with the three, which is five actual presentations, including the chairperson of the council and the department. So, as we are now, we can engage on the presentation. And I want to apologize to other presenters. You will have to bear with us, wait, and for the afternoon session. Honorable Kruger, Honorable Maloy, Honorable Kappa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Starting with the council, and I think we can the line through all three, the other three presentations is exactly the same. The problem is small business development. It seems like not one of the organizations that presented here today actually read the National Development Plan. Because the National Development Plan stated clearly that 90% of jobs must be created by small business development. Now, if we go to the council presentation, you will see on the report back system is economic development. There's nothing about small business development. I mean, why don't they report back also to small business development department? I mean, the department is there now for the past 4 years, and we don't. Why don't they report back to small business development if 2/3 of their clients are small and medium organizations? So that is the problem. And it's the same with the other three organizations that give us this presentations. They have all sorts of development issues and problems, but they don't speak to small business development. There's a department called small business development. And that small business development can sort out all of their problems, development problems. Even, you know, finance and stuff like that. So the biggest problem, MP, is I think we're working here in silos. And from DAF's side, there must be a transversal agreement between small business development and DAF, so that small business development department can know about the problems in the forestry industry. If small business development department don't know about the problems in the forestry department, nothing can happen. So there's a problem, and we all work in silos, and it's time that these three organizations must come to the Small Business Development Committee and also give a presentation, so that the Small Business Development Committee knows about your problems. So, Madam Chair, I'll take it on myself to make sure that in the new year we invite Small Business Development Committee, invite these organizations so that they come to us and tell their problems and their challenges, so that small business development can sort out the challenges. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honorable Maloy.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, the quote was published in June 2009, and today, Chairperson, we are receiving a report which is full of challenges and some obstacles. Now, in your page or slide 21, you are indicating that there are those challenges and so on. The first question I would want to pose to you, taking from the fact that the code was published in 2009, we are in 2017, when did you identify these challenges? Was it only in 2017? If not, if you did identify these challenges long before, what is it that you have done to ensure that we address these problems that exist as you have identified? And if it is because the charter or the law does not have enforcement sections, why don't you share with us those in order for us to know as to whether are we supposed to fiddle with the law or what is the situation? Because you see, we can't sit in meetings and all the time identify problems and challenges when we are supposed to be attending and resolving those challenges. I must indicate that, you know, we've been here for quite some time now, 1994 to 2017. We are supposed to be somewhere. And I yet to change, we are saying that the things are going to change. Things were supposed to have changed by now. We are supposed to be somewhere else, not where we are. So if you can just comment on those, I'll be very happy. Now, Chair, the other thing which, and it is to all those who presented before, and I just want to highlight the following before I conclude. You know, like we said earlier on, communities have raised a number of issues and so on, and now I understand that it means there was a miscommunication between yourselves and whoever was saying you must prepare the presentation. Now, communities have raised a number of issues, and I just want to highlight the few. And I'm highlighting those deliberately because, you know, as this committee, at some point you must prepare a report like the chairperson was saying. That report must be presented to the House, and you must debate that report, and the House must adopt that report. And today's meeting was an opportunity for you to be able to respond to some of these things, which will help the committee as and when we take decisions. We should have listened to everybody and understand what are the views of everybody in terms of this, instead of us going to the House with one side of the story. And for now, this is exactly what we are going to do. And I want to highlight the following, and which are serious things, which as and when I'm going to debate in the House, I can't ignore these things up until somebody tells me otherwise. And let me mention just a few. For an example, we are told that the MTO, you are on many occasions indicating that there are bursaries, but no child has ever received those bursaries. But there is that particular story. Secondly, accommodation for former employees, that you guys from time to time you evict people because of reasons best known to yourselves, but you don't provide alternative accommodation. Irrespective of there is a law that tells you what needs to be done and so on and so forth. And some of these employees have been in those farms for ages, long before some of you were born and so on. You just evict them and so on, and you don't provide any alternative accommodation. Secondly, you are underpaying them. And despite of the fact that you are underpaying them, they are trying to make or ends meet. When they bring their livestock and so on in order for them to have milk, etc., etc., they are forbidden from bringing their livestock there in order for them to make a living. And I'm not sure you are underpaying them, you are refusing for them to bring their livestock in order for them to live and so on. How do you expect them to live? These are the issues that are raised by communities. Some of them, their conditions, you know, one person in Mpumalanga, for example, You are saying you have just quarters. I don't know whether you call those things hostels or whatever. That are subdivided by boxes. And they must live there with their communities, like animals and so on. When they sleep at night and do their things and so on, everybody on that wall can hear what is happening there. When older people are sharing their secrets and so on. Those are the things that are raised by communities which I thought that you'll be able to attend to those. When you subcontract, you take people from outside, you MTO, you tell them particularly that it's because of lack of skills and so on. When you employ people, you employ people from outside, you disregard people who are there. Cape Pine, for example, you are creating divisions. You are bribing leaders and so on in order to divide the community in those areas. Victimization, and it's an issue which was raised by communities of Sitsikama in particular, that when they speak to members of parliament or when they raise issues, they know that the immediate thing we are going to do is to victimize them, either by evicting them and so on and so forth. You are also disregarding the labor laws in this country. And I wouldn't want to remind you what are the labor laws saying and so on, whether it's about the minimum wage, injury at work and so on. These are the things that you are doing. Now, it's quite a number of issues, and I heard you earlier on, you said you have responded to the department and so on. But at least you were supposed to share those with us. You know, I was going through my mail, Chairperson, thinking that maybe our administration did send these things. I have it in my mail. It is not there. This document that you said you have submitted to the department. I don't have those. But what I'm saying is, as and when we are going to debate, what do I say? Because me personally, when we're in these areas, I was saying to the chair, you know, companies must come and respond to this thing in order for us to understand what are their views, what are they saying, and so on. And we're announcing on the 28th of November, we have a date with these companies, and these companies will respond to these things. And you as communities, those who have DSTV, watch 408. And you must call us and tell us as to whether is it true what they told us and so on and so forth. But unfortunately today, your focus was on transformation, which is very important and very key. But there are the specific issues, which from where I'm sitting, I must indicate, Chair, that personally I'm very angry with you based on what I've heard from our communities out there. Very angry. And this was an opportunity for you to try and change my mindset in order to understand from your side as to what is the situation. But for now, I only believe what I have. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm under the impression that it seems to me that we are still going to get very informative and satisfying information around these issues. But I just have two vague questions for all the presenters. That what would be the evidence to convince me that the good things you are talking about are known by these communities, these beneficiaries, are known and they are satisfied? Just to get that part. And further, I would also be interested to know what is the mode of communication. How is communication between these institutions and these communities in a way that not just a paternal approach? And also, with this communication, I would like to establish whether there are specific organizations or platforms. For example, I know that the workers there will have unions. And I wouldn't be afraid to say, in most cases, the unions that represent workers on forests and on farmers, they are usually not in good terms with the employers. But in this case, maybe something very nice and smooth. But it would be interesting then to know that in this case, there are such platforms, there are such forums, such communication. The unions do represent their people there, and it's understood, and these are the things come on. But all those things are just vague things I say, because I'm still convinced that we still have to discuss very, very intensively around issues that were raised by the communities. Thank you, Chair.
I think just to add on what honourable members have raised, just to check, this challenge, both companies and department, we are raising the challenge on land claim. The question is, what have you done so far? Where is the blockage? Because one of the things is that we can be used to unblock those blockages. but I want to commend the Amatole forest. If the model that you are going to implement, probably is because the money is not yet in your pocket. That's why you're thinking it's developmental. I'm not sure. I'll see after you've started to harvest whether that you proceed with those things that you are saying. I think it's a very good model that you've presented to us. I hope other members or other CEOs and managers they can copy from yourself. You know, I want to start from the premise that we should never forget that your lease is not department is holding that land on behalf of those people that you are staying or you are making your business in. We should never forget that and want to impress the department or us here when people that you are leasing their land, they are not happy. MTO, I think you should actually share with us all the issues that has been raised by Honorable Maloi, because they are very critical and important for us to to understand. Because it's in that public hearings, members even shed tears, because there were even people, old people who were made to understand that these people, they don't even know they are the slaves, which this word we had it, I had it when I was born. I don't even think that the Bantustan government had that. But in Naisna, that was the area where the people were being raised. In that meeting to say they are slaves, and it was a shocking statement. And I want to change your recommendation, Honorable Kruger, as a question, because I suppose they are supposed to know that there is in government there is a job fund established by Minister of DTI. There is a, if you are a company, you want to create jobs, and we've got obstacles in terms of the conditions of the Labor Relations Act, you can approach them, including the support of the small business, which has been existing even before 2009. It has been under trade and industry. My question would be, if you are raising these things as challenge, including the small business development, have you tried to interact with this department, trade and industry in particular, because they've got funds and leverage to assist companies that wants to create jobs or support small developers in the country. The department, if I may check, because in your report there is no areas where I can say you are playing oversight, because that's what you're supposed to do. At least the council is raising issues, but your daily operation is to play oversight. What is it that you do when you meet with this company? Do you meet with companies with the exclusion of communities? When do you meet the communities? Because government is government of business and communities. You cannot be government of companies only. What is it that, how often do you meet with the communities that you are representing them in leasing their land and those companies that are leasing land? And what have you done in building the relations between those companies and the communities? And as you respond, we must get what is it that you propose and what you think must be done. You can respond.
Madam Chairperson, thank you very much, and honourable members. I'm actually rather shattered by some of the allegations that were levelled at MTO. Very broad, very sweeping statements that implies that the whole employee base is underpaid, that implies that everybody has been kicked out. So what I'd like to go through in terms of where we are, small business development, I take that on board, that's fantastic. In my presentation, though, we have and are successfully engaged with DTI. They have matched our funding at 4 million rand a year for the next 3 years, specifically geared towards small business development and EMEs and QSEs. So I'm not sure where that got lost in translation, but there is that program. Over and above that, we've gone to the DEG, which is a German bank. They've also put in 2 million rand a year for the next 3 years. So those due diligences and those audits are not done by nobody. DTI have come and DTI have said, this is an incredibly good program. You guys are doing an incredible job at entrepreneurial growth, in growing the black contractor base. That's not just pulled out of nowhere. So we do, and we will certainly engage with small business development independent of that to see what further initiatives we can approach. As far as bursaries are concerned, we will show you the bursaries. You are welcome. And I think all the way through there's going to be a common theme. But I think what the portfolio committee needs to do, you need to engage with us directly and you need to engage with the Department of Labor, for argument's sake, who do an audit every single year on our company. And we have all of that completely transparent and open to all of you for having a look. So using the word slavery and allegations like that have been leveled against us, I'm not going to take it standing. I mean, it's not really on. But if there are those issues, and those are deep-rooted, and that's what the common theme is, we will for sure stand up and take full responsibility. But I'd like you to come and have a look, please, independently, with the Department of Labor and any other division or anybody else that would like to come and interrogate, a forensic audit, whatever you'd like to do, to just satisfy yourselves that that may have been one or two fairly aggressive statements made by individuals during those discussions as opposed to the whole community representation. As far as underpaying employees, the same. Eviction of old employees. I think I'm not aware of any major evictions, although I'd like to also understand from the committee who we've evicted, because there will be likely two sides to every story, and we would like to have the opportunity to respond in context of those, because I can assure you it's not more than one or two people, if any, under circumstances that likely have two sides. Poor accommodation, we'll address that. We continually address that. We've also inherited accommodation. We look after 7 villages that belong to DAF. We pay for over 2 million rand a year out of our own pockets. We don't ask for anything. We've asked DAF to engage to try and get municipalities to take them over as an example. But those accommodations are not ours, not all of them. but we will take on board any other poor accommodation. But again, we'd like the portfolio committee to please highlight exactly where these are and not broad sweeping statements that allude that the whole company is at fault in terms of that accommodation. Contractor employees, we'll look at that. So bribery and victimization. I'd like to understand, please, from the portfolio committee, who did we bribe? Because it's very important for me to understand that so I can root that out of our company. Because I can assure you we've not bribed a single person. I can assure you that that allegation coming from somebody in that meeting, we need to take that person to task to actually understand exactly where they get the word bribery from and who we bribed. And I'd like to know who we victimized as well. That would be very important to us. Thank you very much. Disregarding labor laws. How are we disregarding labor laws when the labor department themselves, and we subscribe within the full law, they come and audit us every year? How is it that they don't believe that we are disregarding labor laws? Our own department, our own government. Communication channels, that's an excellent question. And as I said in my presentation, we don't communicate appropriately, obviously, because messages are getting lost in translation. We're listening to fragmented and independent voices. There is the silo mentality. We're not collaborative as an industry. We haven't done a great job at communicating. So I take that on board, and for sure, we need to change the way in which we tell our story, in which we send our messages, all the way down from government through to the stakeholders and communities. And obviously, unions and platforms to work through unions, they are available, so we can explore that as a way forward. So, Madam Chair, I'm very happy, and I welcome and I invite the Portfolio Committee independently to come and sit with us in our company at any point of time without preparation. You come and interrogate, please. Please come and interrogate. Bring whoever you need to bring to interrogate any part of the business that you've allegedly implied that we are not subscribing to. That would be my offer, and I appreciate that so that we can put to bed once and for all hostile allegations like bribery, victimization, and slavery. Not on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. The next chair.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to respond to some of the issues which were raised by the honourable members here in terms of the charter, the council itself. The first one was whether we never identified any problems in the past. And I think when I joined the council as a community member initially, community members were not given the leeway to go out to communities and communicate with communities, community members in the council itself, until we forced issues that indeed we should. Until we forced issues that there should be a budget allocated to community members to do that. And hence, you know, the community, the outreach program that I talked about, I think the report will be given to you in due course. Now, secondly, the honorable member asked whether, you know, it is because there is no legal imperative which forces companies to belong. Thou transformation is a government imperative. Indeed, there's none. There is no consequences for any company to join from the look of things, perhaps unless for companies who have taken over government funds. And I think I'll give a suggestion right now as to exactly what is it that we should do. Now, we in the council, we agreed, the last two councils, we agreed that now we should introduce a statutory and mandatory levy to ensure that all forest-related business entities contribute towards transformation of the sector of the communities in which they are located, whether they belong to their association or not. We've already written a letter to the department here through, you know, in their last meeting. We've already written a letter to the department where we ask the Department of Agriculture to ensure that that is being gazetted, because we cannot go to companies and force them to pay that levy in one way or another. Now, the second issue is now, this would more or less, for instance, cover the issue of lack of consequences for not doing the right thing. Because currently, it's this procurement carrot that entices companies to do the right thing in terms of triple BEE. Perhaps we should move away from this, you know, dangling this procurement carrot and indicate to companies that, yes, indeed, this is a government imperative. There might be no legal imperative, but it is a government requirement that as long as you operate in the country, you have to contribute towards the transformation of the people in this country, especially in the forestry sector. Now, the other issue where the member said now, small business development. I think it was our mistake. We made an assumption. We assumed or presumed that seeing that DTI is part of the meeting, DTI will be able to engage with basically everyone. Because, you know, as we are talking right now, IDC takes part in our meetings. And they know, even when we go out to communities to communicate with communities, we call the department, all the departmental members in, and even call in IDC so that when people identify problems, they are able to sit down with them and indicate to them exactly what they should do. Perhaps what we should be saying right now is that now, the process of funding for entrepreneurs should be made in such a way that it is easily accessible for black people, if I should put it that way. You have conditions which act as a limiting factor in terms of the funding process. But if we were to simplify those conditions in terms of the funding process to ensure that a lot of the people become entrepreneurs, it would work for us in one way or another. Now, the other issue is why do we have problems? For instance, I talked about the issue of the water affairs, where licensing takes close to a whole bloody year before people can be given licenses. We've been inviting water affairs to come into our meetings so that they should know exactly what the communities are saying and what industry is saying. But water affairs doesn't pitch. In the last meeting, we requested a representative from DAF to ensure that they make it a point that I have an appointment with the people responsible for transformation in water affairs so that we should be able to talk about the issues as well as local government. We invite them, they don't turn up. Now, as a council, we can only do it through the department under which we are responsible, and that's DAF that we're doing our things in. Now, maybe the other issue is now, apart from introduction of the statutory levy, the other thing that we proposed to council and they've agreed upon was we wanted to name and shame companies which were not doing the right thing. But then I was advised by council that if you name and shame them, they'll sue you. They say they'll sue you if you do that. I said to them, quite okay, if I don't name and shame them, I'm going to name and glorify those which are there. We'll take this, put it in the papers, and these are the compliant ones, and give the list to DTI to distribute to all government departments and indicate that if there is any business that you want to do, these are compliant businesses in terms of transformation. You do the business with those. The letter will be going out there. Now, the last issue, perhaps, which I can talk to as one of the ameliorative actions, perhaps, that the council is proposing is that now, we have forest sector charter council affiliated entities. We want to behave like NBHR is doing. For any company here to get accredited, they must get a certification of compliance from us first, that indeed they belong. They can then be accredited. Now, if a company that they're doing the right thing in terms of transformation, if a company would like to do business with government, for instance, they must have a certificate also from the council which indicates that, yes, indeed, they are compliant in terms of transformation. I think I'll end my story there.
Yeah. Ellie? Yes,
sir. Madam Chair, on the issues of communities, I don't think there's anything for me to respond to.
Yes, we have not touched that area because of the limitation of time.
I would just also, if I may, like to ask a question of clarification around small business development. Is it small business development within the timber industry or outside of the timber industry that is the concern?
Yeah.
Chair, it was obvious during the sessions that business development in the timber industry and around the forest is a problem.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond to that point. I think we must understand that every hectare of timber can support a certain number of jobs. So if you're going to grow wattle, you chop it down, you send it to the chipping plant, and they export the chips overseas. And there's no further jobs created in the country. If you grow gum, you send them to a pulp mill or to a paper mill, and they make board, and they make paper, and these are massive, big, highly mechanized, very, very expensive plants. If you grow saw logs like we do, you send it to a sawmill, and again, the equipment required to convert the saw logs into planks is very big and very expensive. And if you speak to the IDC, they will tell you that primary production in the timber industry, for the sake of economics, to make it economically viable, has to be done with economies of scale, with big investment, and with big industries. The small industries happen at the tertiary stage, in the furniture industries. We sell the Rand's timber sawmills produce 70% structural timber that goes into houses and 30% industrial timber that goes into, say, furniture factories. None of that timber is exported. It is all sold here in South Africa, where it is made into doors, etc., and they are exported. So the value-added chain is working. What more we can do to develop timber industries inside that value chain, I'm not sure. Around the value chain, say with supplementary functions like harvesting and transport, we've got a conundrum here. On the one hand, the expectation on us through the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act is to grow black ownership in our business, to develop skill development, develop management, to develop the human capital within our businesses. And our business model is to do that in-house. So we train our own transfer operators, we buy our own harvesting machines, we train our own harvesting managers and transport managers and drivers, etc. So on the one hand, we criticize for not developing those enterprises outside of our business. On the other hand, we're not credited with the human capital development inside our business. I'd like that to be considered, please. And lastly, on Mr. Kaipa's question on communities, my colleague Mr. Mkhashula is able, if you would like him, to answer how we engage with the communities through the Clause 46 process.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and honourable members. Chris was saying, I'm Mr. Mkhashula from Amatole Forestry Company, and I'm responsible for stakeholder relations. And community liaison is one of my main functions. And now I'm wanting to respond to the question by one honorable member about the mode of communication that is being followed between the communities, the companies, and the government. The communities are divided into liaison structures as per the district or the areas where they come from. If, for instance, a structure is made up of 15 villages, there are two representatives from each village, and those representatives are made up of ordinary community members, the traditional councillors, the traditional leader, or the chief, as well as the ward councillors or ward committee members. So there is every area of the community is represented in those structures. And after every quarter, we have the RCC meetings with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, where we report back on a quarterly basis. That means 4 times per annum, and the 5th time is the annual lease report meeting, which are held in Pretoria. So that is how the mode of communication works between the companies. It is not a haphazard thing. It is a structured a way or mode of communicating with the communities. And if, with your permission, Madam Chair, I may also make a comment, not now responding to the to the questions.
Comment on what, sir?
On what? On what was said by, asked by the honorable members that were asking questions. Yeah, there was also a mention of one member being now angry or too aggressive. Yeah, I'm just wanting to advise that the communities, the companies, and the government, we need each other or one another. We must just be patient in the way that we deal with matters or concerns that are facing us. Every now and then, either through the media or at the rallies, we hear the politicians saying, when things get too hot, we hear the politicians saying, we cannot undo in 23 years what the apartheid government did over many decades. Likewise, with the companies, there will always be those small problems that the community members will want to make a mountain out of a molehill. So we need to accommodate one another.
No, no. You see, said because you have invited me to respond to you. You know, when you serve communities, you serve it because you are a leader, you are leading them, and you must provide leadership. And you must acknowledge their thinking and mold it such that their thinking will actually assist you to develop themselves. So the issue of them building, exaggerating or whatever, it doesn't even arise. That's why we are accepting as politicians that they are right for them to say 23 years it's long. But you are right to say there are certain things that could have not been done within that particular time. But the question is, how you handle the issues and communicate to the same community. You don't have to wait for the politician to come into your area for you to go and communicate those issues with community. But if you are working with your community properly, they would understand your difficulties because you explain to them. That's why politicians will go back to the people and explain why certain things are not done within 23 years. And you too, you are required to go to the community and explain to them. And it's them who will judge that your statement is reasonable or not. You cannot say they are making a small issue a hill. It's uncalled for. So, let's allow other members to respond on this issue. Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair.
It's not done. There are still departments to respond. They are not finished. It's just he wanted to add, but he go out of his own way. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of our oversight role, I think that was the main question for the department. We, as I had indicated earlier, in terms of the lease agreements, we do have these quarterly discussions and site visits that we do. And we also participate in discussion with communities in terms of the challenges that they are experiencing. I must say that, for instance, as much as Amatola, for instance, doesn't have any claim that has been settled, we still have those meetings, the liaison forums, according to Clause 46, where we participate as a department. Secondly, we have our forestry development officials that are in the different provinces that do interface with communities. And obviously, we cannot say that, you know, there's a point where you say there's enough in terms of how we should interface. I think going forward, it's something that we would need to strengthen as a department on how we make sure that we communicate better and find better ways of communicating with our stakeholders. Obviously, that would mean that we would probably need to increase our capacity. As you know, we do not have enough people on the ground that are able to do the work. We'll have to also deal with the financial capacity that would be required. As much as we are not responsible for the settlement of claims, we do have continuous discussions with rural development in terms of how can we assist or how can they assist us in ensuring that the claims are settled. We've worked with them since the beginning, and which is why we have some claims that have been that have been settled. And obviously, we would need to have more engagements with them in terms of how do we deal with such issues. Some of the community challenges that are raised, communities are able to contact us directly, and then we are able to assist them. For instance, there were communities in KwaZulu-Natal around Hlokozi that had issues with a tender that we had issued. So it created, as much as the tender was meant to empower the communities around, and then there were conflicts. So we get those as well. Besides the structured meetings that we would have, there would be those ad hoc requests that would come in. And as soon as we are aware, then we are able to deal with those. I think, Chairperson, we would probably need that with the companies that are leasing the land from us. We've started that with Singesi because Singesi has the most settled claim, to have discussions with the communities, the CTAs that have been settled, with the company and ourselves in rural development. So for each of these packages, that is the trend that we are going to do. We have struggled with KZN around Siyaqhubeka because there are community conflicts there. So you are unable to have a proper meeting. In one of the communities, there's issues about who's the chief of the area. So you can't really call that meeting to have those communities to have those discussions. We have engaged, though, with Traditional Affairs to assist us in those discussions. And some of the issues are in court, so we are unable to directly try and assist in those. But those are the things that we continuously do. And obviously, we would need to beef up our capacity for us to be able to deal with additional consultation with communities that is required.
Okay. Honorable Maloyi, you wanted to raise something.
Yes, Chair, just two things. You know, if the community of Makoba says they have a plantation and they don't have access to their own plantation because a certain company called ZZ2 claims that they bought their land without their knowledge, I'll be very angry. Now, if a community says we must walk for more than 500 meters to go to a bathroom in the early hours of the morning and so on, there are no bathrooms next to where we are staying, I'll be very angry. If a community says we are treated like slaves, I'll be extremely angry, and I will not compromise on those, and I will not wait for 20 years for us to attend to those matters. And if a community says some of our leaders are bribed in order to cause confusion, I'd be very angry. Now, Chair, I hope the gentleman from MTO is not suggesting that this committee is making allegations. And I hope that the gentleman from MTO is also not saying that you are making sweeping statements. I hope that's not what he's saying. Because what we are presenting before him is what the communities have raised. And we have said, and which we are saying again, if there was no communication sent to you that there are these issues which have been raised by communities in order for you to respond to those issues, that's what we are talking about. So those are the issues raised by communities. And that's why we have called you. Because we are trying to apply the rules of natural justice to hear the other side of the story. So we are not making allegations as a committee. We are telling you what communities are saying. And you are not making sweeping statements. That's what communities are saying. So I'm going to appeal that we must get responses on those issues, Chair. Because I am still very angry about what I've heard from our people down there when we were there. So we'll need you to talk to us and respond to those. And if you did not get those, Chair, I would suggest that they must be given all the issues that were raised by those communities in order for them to respond to those issues that were raised by those communities. And of course, we shall go back to those communities. We will go back to go and verify some of the things which you would have told us, including what they would have told us, in order for us at the end of the day to know exactly what is the truth on this matter. But unfortunately, we shall not compromise. We are public representatives and we'll represent our people. Will not defend anything and so on. Like the chairperson was saying, there are other issues which you can't attend or which you can't address within 23 years. But there are others which you can attend today, in a year, or in 6 months' time. So you can't say our people must wait forever for a toilet. They can't wait forever for a toilet. It's not possible. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Maloyi. I think that's how we should actually approach these issues. We are calling everybody to say these are the things that our community are raising about yourself. Particularly, you are leasing the land that belongs to them. And they need to get that respect that they deserve as those communities. And that's how we should understand this issue. And I just want to follow up on the department, because I'm very worried about the department's oversight role. Maybe we should understand. As you interact with these companies on quarterly basis, does the council, which is supposed to play oversight, is it invited in that meeting? And why is not invited?
Chairperson, the monitoring of the lease agreements has in the past been done between DAF and the companies. And the participation of the council, we have never invited them to participate. But I think it's something that we should consider and make sure that they participate, because already rural development, in terms of the dealing with claims, they do come and give support or progress reports or action plans in terms of how they will deal with them. So going forward, this is something that we will ensure that we do. But the council does meet with the companies on an annual basis when we do, I think Mr. Mkhashula referred to that we'll have quarterly meetings and then we'll have an annual meeting. When we have the annual meeting, then we do have that discussion. So we will just have to increase the frequency of the discussions with the council.
No, Dr. Chair. I think you should be part of those meetings. They must invite you. Welcome, Acting DG. this council is been appointed by the minister to be the advisory council which relates to issues of forestry to the minister. So if there are other meeting in the corner where the council is not party to, it's very wrong. It's very wrong. I think that's something that we have to correct, that the council actually, when we, that's why we don't have to call, because council is playing the role that the us were supposed to play. So ourselves and council should make sure that things happen, and therefore the department should make sure that council, if there is any other meeting that deals with forestry, the council must be there, so that we have a coherent message. I was trying to close on this issue. Let me welcome you, Honorable Steyn, and give you a chance before we close on this one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was listening carefully because unfortunately I couldn't attend to all the processes, the participation processes, so I didn't have all the details. But Chair, listening to this and having some of the input that we had with some of the community structures, my concern is that, and that is why I think we went out on this community participation process in the first place after calling for submissions into Parliament and seeing on that first day what communities were telling us. My concern is that it's almost as if the forestry sector and where people are functioning is separate from around the communities. And I'm speaking under correction, but most of the forestry sectors and the people that we have here today is either working on land that is under land claims or in areas where there's land, a lot of land claims next to the forestry section. And I have concern that everyone involved are failing the communities regarding processes that which they feel they are supposed to be part of. And I was also listening to the communication structure with communities. I have been involved in PG Bison Yugi a year or two ago when there was massive unrest about people not being part taken into employment. I had to drive from my home as part of my work as a member of parliament 500 kilometers every Sunday morning and back on a Sunday evening or Monday morning early to come to Cape Town to try and resolve the issue. And the issue began because of the people that were elected from the community to sit on these structures that then deals with management. So Chairperson, I think everyone involved needs to go back and see if the communication structures that's used is good enough. I can totally fully understand that communities are really tired because their claims are not dealt with, their issues are not dealt with, and there's a system, although it's a structural system, it's always, you have to have a system. But if the system is failing you, sometimes we need to work outside of the system and just go and sit in communities and try and understand what is the frustrations. So I think, Chairperson, maybe also the structure or the system that's there could be blocking the understanding of communities of what is happening. I would really like to urge, doesn't matter the process and the law and things that's happening, but most of the forestry communities are unhappy because they had land claims, the land claims is not moving along, and it seems to them that they are being used or chased out of their land without progress. So I would like to ask from my side that the forestry sector go and also sit down with the communities outside of that formal structure and just have a talk and find out what is the frustration, because it might also be that the communication structure is not always bringing the message to both sides. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Steyn. I think as they have acknowledged that their communication probably strategy is not
resulting in good communication. So I think that's a very good suggestion that you're putting forth, and I think it should be clear that we are not saying people must go outside the law, because tomorrow we might be quoted that we said they must go outside the law. We're saying let's make sure that communication reach for the advantage of the company, for you to understand what the people that you serve are saying. And the same thing, it happens to communities. So you should actually consider the issues that the Honorable Member is raising for you to have a better communication. And Chair, you've raised important things that other council have not done, listening to communities. And I think those, as you listen to the community, let's feedback to the companies. And as you assess them with those things in the law, but you must raise there are other basic issues that communities, for instance, any company has got this social responsibility in the area that is operating. You can't have people saying, we've been requesting a toilet in this area, and then it takes 5 years. What is the responsibility, your social responsibility as a company? And I think it's very important that as you deal with this lease, it doesn't replace the responsibility of the company, because you are under the shadow of the of government. Therefore, you are hiding within government not to do the right thing. It cannot be right, because you are meeting with the DDG or somebody every 3 months. Therefore, you ignore what people are saying or what you're supposed to be your responsibilities as companies. It will be very wrong. So because you have a responsibility to be an exemplar. You know, I've been telling to smallholder farmers, I said to them, your condition would not be the same as those farmers under apartheid, because they operated under particular rules. For instance, they were exploiting labor. In your case, you can't exploit labor. The law does not allow you to do that. Therefore, even the returns will not be the same. That's the condition that we have to accept to work under. So I think those are the things that need to be taken in cognizance as we forge our together to develop our country. We should be able to accept that we are in a different path, and this path, if I join it, I have to sacrifice certain things. If I was doing things in this manner, I cannot do them now because legislation does not require me to do those things. Because it's very, it's not a worthy meeting to come and listen to people not doing the dealing with things that are outside legislation, because it means that South Africans were not actually respecting our own legislation. And our call here is that let's respect our legislation. The people that we serve, all of us, we have responsibility. And those that are given responsibilities to lead must lead and follow what is required of them. And I think from our side, we'll increase the meetings with the council such that we get the feedback. And it's upon the opportunity, it's upon the companies for them to go back and deal with these issues. We're still going to listen to other companies. But before those MTOs and others will go, you can get the copy of what people are saying about you, so that without confronting or victimizing or
doing any harm things. Let's deal with the situation such that we respond. We will come to you. We accept the invitation. We'll come to you, but at our pace, and at the time we come, we don't announce, as we said, we must not announce. That's our nature. We don't announce when we visit. We'll come, and it will be because we'll even call those communities. We'll carry them to yourself. So I think what is important is that we're saying these are the issues that have been raised. Let's correct them if they're existing. If they are not existing, clarify us, convince us that they are not existing. And how do you harmonize the situation such that your business thrives? Because in my own view, in unstable areas, you never get a business that thrives smoothly. That's my understanding, and that's the logic that I suppose every businessman would have that in his interest. Thank you very much for those that have presented. We are going to adjourn for lunch. Come back at 2:15. But the venue has changed. It's next to Parliament. Those who have not been in Parliament.